Our strategic plans and our inputs do not show international obligations, I expect that to be reported on. So even although it's not necessarily in your, I mean, I express the view that I think it should be in your strategic plan, but I don't know how you do a strategic plan if there are international obligations you have to comply with and not part of your strategic plan. But okay, over and above that, so Millennium Goals is one issue, but then I know you, particularly your department, has a whole lot of other obligations. And same with water, if there are other international obligations over and above Millennium Development Goals, I also want a proper accounting of that, okay? Because it's not part of your, necessarily part of your strategic plan. So it may not usually be part of the inputs. So I want it specially made part of the inputs, okay? This we decided last year. I'm just reminding you about it. All right. Before we start, is there anything from the members? Okay. Yes, Ms. McCall.
Chair, just on clarity, there was a couple of other things that you requested that we include in the strategic plan presentation around some of the how, but, and it comes specifically from the expanded public works presentation. So we are building our presentation to include that for all our main focus areas in terms of the how and the structure element and what do we do ourselves. We've also built in, based on your request last year, and specifically to the budget, the rationalization strategy around the use of outsourcing, of using consultants. Then in terms of the MPC document, the plan, although Chapter 5 speaks to the low carbon, there's actually environmental considerations in almost every chapter. So our response to the Planning Commission itself speaks to the entire document. And I know you've indicated that you just want us to listen and to respond. We do have a draft document that we can avail to the committee that speaks to the implications of, which will be ready by Friday. Of course, we will highlight some of the issues in the meeting, but there is a document that, there's quite a few implications throughout the document for our mandate.
My main thing I want to sort out now is I want us as a committee to get a feel of what the MPC said, so we do it collectively. And then I want to see if there are possibilities of deviation from our policy. I mean, that's for me the most important, because we then have to sort that out. In June, I've already told, is it Ms. Beaumont? Sorry, I'm still learning. I've already indicated in June you're coming for a whole week. Then, hopefully we'll tease out those issues much more to see how you're dealing with it in terms of implementation. But I think an important thing for now, you see, I mean, they're interesting things. As Minister Manuel has said, a lot of issues, he's raised issues and they're quite controversial. For example, the fracking issue. Now, the point is, we need to engage on that, because clearly, if that becomes government policy, then, we need to know what our view is and so on. So I think that that's what my issue, I mean, where we've got policy, and that policy in that document is, we're in line with that. I think there's not a big problem with that. Then we can look at implementation when we look at that in June. But what is more worrying for me is if there are the possibilities of deviation, then that is something we need to find a way of, in a rational, reasonable way of engaging with that. Because clearly, it would be difficult if we had those. Now, it may not be that there are things like that. But that for me is, at the moment, your response to how you fit into that is an important one. But I'm not so worried to take that yet. It has to be ready in the next while so that as we go forward, okay? DG?
Thanks, Chair. I think
there's
the investment is quite crucial for this committee, and the department is ready with the response. And we had a meeting with the committee, with the commissioner, and there are areas of contradiction with our policy. Mm-hmm. The climate change policy is the case in point in relation to that low carbon chapter, and other areas of sustainable development, land use issues, and so on. So I think In fact, it could also be well be that chapter on low carbon growth was supposed to be more encompassing and more a sustainable development chapter than just only one aspect. But I think those are the issues, and we can give you the notes from what we've prepared as comments.
Well, that will be important, because then if we engage with the Commission tomorrow, it will help the committee already to see where the differences are, and we can start that engagement at least, okay? That's good. Then, of course, there's a lot of things which both departments have been very lax about. Like you see, I'm like an elephant. I've got a long memory. But there's a whole... I was not one of those that have been shot, but okay. There's a whole list of things, particularly with the Department of Water, that should have been done. But Paula, I don't know where she is. She always took notes and lists of things that have to be done. Now, that stuff, everything you haven't reported on, next 2 weeks' time, we'll be saying what has been happening. Even if you haven't done what we've asked you, then at least you should report that to us and say, this hasn't been done, this is still work in progress. But that whole list of things that we've asked for needs to really be part of those report decks, because I've tried to not pressurize during the year because we're all dragged into different directions. But come this time of the year, there has to be an accounting of all the tasks, okay? So please make that part of your inputs. Alright. Okay, let's start. The sonar, what is important for us is to see what parts of the speech have implications for the department, whether the department has already got programs in those areas or are thinking of programs, and whether we need to look at it further later on, etc. That's really what we need to look at when we deal with the sonar, okay? So the Department of Environment, you can start. I see there is an input.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Member. With DIA, the implications of sonar are mostly in line with what is already our programs and areas of work. I think there are also areas that have indirect implications which we haven't put in here specifically, because you've asked for specific detailed briefings on that. For example, in terms of equity, the way in which we deal with waste services would be an important consideration, but there is a detailed briefing on the integrated waste management strategy. So we haven't elaborated much on those things that you either had a briefing like expanded public works last week, or where a detailed briefing is still ahead of us. The detailed feedback on COP17 is an example of this. Chair, how we've approached it is to firstly look at the State of the Nation address and provide a high-level summary, and then indicate it in red the areas that are relevant to DIA directly or indirectly. In terms of the summary of the speech, the President emphasized in the midterm review the progress that we've made in various areas such as health, education, human settlements, energy, water, provision of water provision, rural development and others, and then that kept on focusing on the triple challenge of unemployment, poverty and inequality. The government entered into the recession, and the President then also indicated how that impacted on us in terms of our levels of debt, for example, but it allows for flexible response to the economic conditions. The National Development Plan was also highlighted in the speech, and specifically in terms of how it deals with the elimination of poverty and inequality, and the critical points that must be attended to. What is relevant to DRV is growth and job creation, and again the eradication of poverty and inequality in terms of our mandate. The President then went on to the interests of the poor, and the big announcements around the infrastructure development have, from a regulatory perspective, quite a big implication on us in terms of creating an environment where the regulatory environment is enabling, but at the same time, ensure sustainability and environmental resilience of the infrastructure that we are developing. Also, the announcements in terms of agriculture, mining, and manufacturing have implications in terms of our regulatory and sustainable development mandate, and then we have a specific role to play in terms of the green economy. The two main things that we get right create through the mainstreaming of job creation in every government entity, including the state-owned enterprises, and we've elaborated on our job creation on the expanded public work programs in our briefing last week, and I will touch again on that a little bit today. And then the social dialogue issues and the work that we've done around the green economy at court is
this court, you know, I try to find it. Is it gone underground or where? Do we have a, does someone have a copy of this thing? I hear that Parliament signed it and we've all been excited about it, but, you know, as a greenie myself, I just haven't seen this thing yet.
Chair, it should have gone through the Portfolio Committee on dealing with economic development driven by EDD, Minister Patel's department. So we can give you the copy, and it does not touch on all the elements of the Green Economy Plan. It highlighted some of the areas of renewables, for instance, and we can, I think we can get a copy from it.
Get a copy, and if there are comments on to what extent the areas that haven't been covered, that will be worth our while if we want to follow it up, okay? Thank you.
The launch of campaign of building the infrastructure nationwide, as I said, that has quite some implications for us because it is definitely on a fast-track route, which has implications in terms of ensuring, and I think the same would apply to water things in terms of ensuring sustainability and while enabling this much needed growth and job creation drive. The renewable energy as part of the work that we're doing, both in terms of our contribution to the green economy strategy as well as the regulatory side of infrastructure, has the implication in terms of the announcements around renewable energy. Then there was the asset mine drainage component that was emphasized, in which we haven't highlighted that in red because the department play an advisory role in that regard and it's not driving the work around asset mine drainage, but we are in partnership with Waterways and Minerals on that work. Then, of course, there was the international work. The President mentioned specifically the successful outcome of COP17, and as I've indicated before, the detailed feedback will follow after the Cabinet presentation. But we will highlight just a high level what we think was significant about COP17. And then we will focus a little bit in terms of RIO+20 because we are the focal point for RIO+20, and we will just indicate what we are doing in preparation. Morning, Minister. What we are doing around RIO+20. I must just also emphasize here that, again, because this has not yet been considered by Cabinet, we are not talking about the country position, because that is still subject to Cabinet consideration, but we will be talking about the processes and the participation and the consultation leading up
to edify my ignorance. What are the kind of issues that are dealt with there other than we dealt with at COP17?
RIO+20 is specifically focusing, and I'm dealing with that in the presentation, Chair, but it has got, this year, got two main focuses, which is the green economy and the institutional arrangements around sustainable development. So it talks very much about whether the Commission should become a convention, is there a way of making some of it internationally binding, what should the reporting mechanisms be, etc., and what are the means of implementation of any political outcome around the green economy and the progress.
The kind of implementation of some of the issues.
Yes, because the previous 6-7 sessions were themes-based in the Commission of Sustainable Development. So each one of the themes coming from the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation was dealt with in the commission meetings over the past 6-7 years. So some of that would need to be coming into the means of implementation, but the big focus is in terms of what should be the means of implementation around the green economy, what's the definition of the green economy, what does it mean for developing countries, and that is the big debate issue that is going to be discussed at CSO.
When we South Africa has a position, I think we must try and engage around this. I want to talk to the minister about it so that we can just, from, because I know there's a legislator summit, I think the week before or something. So it's important that we make sure South Africa is on the same line. So just bear that in mind and make a note when we can start engaging publicly on it, okay? Sorry, can I just say welcome, Minister, and I've heard that you will be leaving soon, so you're more than welcome to be, as I've said always, when you want to leave, don't hesitate, you can. And of course, if you want to make inputs, also make inputs.
Thank you, Chair. Then I'm now getting to the areas that was highlighted in red, to just say what the role of the department is. And the first area is the green economy and job creation aspects that was emphasized in it. When we talk from the department's perspective around the green economy, as DG has explained, the green economy is driven by the Department of Economic Development. Our department, however, is playing the role of implementing the sector action as part of the green economy, and I will be talking about that sector action a little bit more. So we see the green economy and the work that we do as South Africa Sustainable Development in Action. It's a system of economic activity to result in...
Don't we have a strategic plan around sustainable development?
We have a strategy, Jim.
Strategy?
Yes.
And I kind of... Maybe I'm a bit harsh, but I do feel that it seems to me that clearly... If sustainability is the underpinning of our overall policy to natural resources, as I understand it, which I may be wrong, then we seem to be acting in an ad hoc manner. I mean, I would expect everything we do to fit into that sustainable plan and that we have a vision. And then if my department does something, then we fit into the vision. If another department something, it's fitting. It seems to me we start to regurgitate and we start to actually create contradictions and I think we must, if we the lead department on sustainable, we should actually pull these things in line. And we should be commenting more strongly. I really just feel, I think a lot of good things, don't misunderstand me, I don't think it's not good stuff, but I think when you start acting in an ad hoc, and it seems then you pull in this direction, you're not kind of remembering everything fits within sustainable development, and that's where we're going, then we're going to make mistakes. But I'm glad you think so as well. It's something we then need to look at more carefully, DJ. We need to look at this thing more carefully. Because it's very clear to me is that we're not kind of reinventing the wheel, and in that process, some of the wheel is, no wheel is usually round. I understand. Unless you were Fred Flintstone's time, then they were a bit more square. But at the moment, it looks like when we reinvent this wheel, then we do get a few flat edges as well, not so round anymore. Okay, but we'll engage with that more.
No,
you're not to talk.
I'll have one more question.
Yes, sir.
Are we allowed to make follow-up questions to your remarks?
Not now. When the input finishes, then you can do it. Welcome. There are as many.
Yeah, but can you allow this presentation to continue and then all of us we ask questions after that? Because your interruptions, we lose the thought process. I'm sorry, I'm stupid, but I lose thought process.
Let me chair the meeting the way I chair it, and if it does create too much problems, I'll try not to let it create too much problems for you. But this is the way we do it. Thank you, General. Go on, Ms. McCord.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the strategy for sustainable development, we have has indicated when we did the list that this is something that we should do a briefing on. And we will also, like we always do with the strategic plan, give you that backup document that we've published. I think it's important to note that the strategy was approved in November last year, so it is still very much hot off the press. But I think it would be very good to have an engagement on the strategy for sustainable development. So in terms of the green economy, it fits very, very strongly into the strategy for sustainable development, because we do see it as the implementation, as one of the implementation policies and strategies of government to ensure sustainability. And therefore, it is a system of economic activities resulting in improved well-being while not exposing future generations to significant environmental risk or ecological scarcity. And that is just a very nice way to actually say what Section 24 of the Constitution says. We also think it's important that we start to enforce the notion of decoupling resource use and environmental impact from economic growth. So that there is not the necessary tension, but that is seen as an enabling environment both ways, that economic growth can actually enable sustainable development and the other way around. It is characterized by substantially increased investment in the green sectors, supported by enabling policy reforms. If we then look at the national policy landscape in support of a green economy, and Chair, this is the same slide that we did almost a little bit more than a year ago on the 16th of February last year. We presented the green economy and our role in that to you, and this has not changed much apart from the fact that the National Strategy for Sustainable Development and Action Plan has now been approved and is in place. It was a draft we presented to you. Now this slide then just also from that slide from last year then says specifically what it is that the Department of Environmental Affairs do. The National Green Economy Strategy fits within the new growth path. The department is responsible for the environmental sector contribution to a green economy, to the green economy strategy. And we have three areas of focus for that. We have the major event greening and the 2010 FIFA World Cup and the legacy projects from there is an example of that, as well as the green initiatives around COP17, and we are still currently consolidating what the carbon footprint was and what we managed to bring it down to through the interventions of greening we had. Then we have the priority programs. We've highlighted that last, and I will talk to them again. The nine areas of focus.
What are they?
It's in the next slide. And also in terms of that, in some aspects we are the implementing agent, and in some aspects we are coordinating, because there are things that's done by other departments but it sits within the sector. And then we look at the means of implementation, which is mostly the strategic partnerships, and then the financial mechanism, which is a combination of donor funding, on-budget funding, as well as the Green Fund announced last year in the Minister's budget speech. The key focus areas is resource conservation and management, and the column to the right is just given an indication of the related programs. It's not limited to these, but these are the type of programs that would fall within that focus area. The ecosystem services, in which we are doing quite a lot of work in terms of costing what ecosystems work and looking at modalities of environmental levies, etc., that we can look at payment for ecosystem services, but that work is still really very much in its infancy. In the working for programs, or the expanded public work programs, specifically the natural resource management ones that we were talking about last week, that is the working for water programs mostly, and the working for fire programs mostly. And then the infrastructure resilience and ecosystems, offset program, and wildlife management. I must just make it clear here that if we talk about offsets here, we're not only talking about offsets in the context of carbon. There are other offsets that we are also looking at, which include biodiversity offsets, which include even social impact offsets in terms of when you resettle people and there's division, there's no longer access to natural resources, how do you address that? and that is a program that we are focusing very much on developing going forward in the next financial year. And then the whole thing around wildlife management and the wildlife economy, which is also a developing area of work. The work in key focus area one is very much within the mandate of DEAR, and we are very much driving most of the work in key area one. Sustainable waste management practices, the issue of waste beneficiation, where we're talking about not only the recycling and the reuse opportunities, but the second to last in the waste hierarchy, where there is also potential and that must still be further investigated in terms of waste to energy. And then also looking at the pilots around zero waste community programs. A big area of focus going into the new financial year would be the implementation of the integrated waste management strategy, which we're not expanding on in much detail here because it is on your program for the next term, which looks at the whole waste management hierarchy and how we implement that in line with the green economy focus areas. Water management, the areas that is highlighted there talk about water harvesting, alternative technology. That is more the focus area of the Department of Water Affairs, but it is also coordinated into the reporting on this area through, for example, our something. In terms of environmental sustainability, the greening and legacy work that we are doing, and I'm going to talk about some of it. There's many initiatives, but I'll talk specifically around the solar panels that we've developed and the spin-off in terms of jobs that we have in that regard. And then a whole lot of work around research and awareness, training, skills development, and knowledge management in the area of environmental sustainability, again linked to the strategy for sustainable development. The green buildings and the built environment, in that regard, we've done the framework for greening, and we are working very closely with the Green Building Council, as well as with the Department of Public Works, to put in some standards, norms and standards in terms of greening public buildings specifically. Sustainable transport and infrastructure. This is an area where we are more facilitating and where the Department of Transport is taking the lead. And those of you that have been there would see, for example, the big bicycle drive at COP17 and then donating that into communities is an example of a pilot around the non-motorized transport. The clean energy and energy efficiency, this is very much run by the Department of Energy, but we do have a regulatory role here to play mostly in terms of providing an enabling environment for this, but also in terms of the responses in terms of both the climate change policy as well as the strategy for sustainable development. Agriculture, food production, food production and forestry. Again, it's an area that we influence and provide an enabling environment for, but it's more the responsibility of the Department of Agriculture, Fishery and Forestry, as well as some work done by rural development through, for example, the rural development strategy that was announced by the President in the summer. I think for us, the importance of the rural development strategy is to influence that with sustainable land use practices. And bringing in the wildlife, and that is also one of our comments on the Planning Commission's documents, is that the rural development chapter is very quiet in terms of conservation as well as the wildlife economy as a rural development driver and focus more on agriculture. So I think that is an area which we are all working with rural development and land reform on in this regard. And then the whole issue around sustainable consumption and production, where industry-specific production methods are looked at, as well as technology changes, and we're looking at the Centre for Cleaner Production, for example, by DCI, where a lot of this work is driven. So, Chair, those are the focus areas that we are either driving or involved in as a department. We talked about this, and I'm going to try to go through it much quicker now. It's about the job contribution, because you have the detailed input, and we will provide the further detail as requested when we do the strategic plan. But we do the short-run employment scheme centered on expanding the community works program, we are influencing that with the department that is leading it, the DCOC, Department of Cooperative Governance, and we participate in that process to provide input in terms of making these jobs meaningful in terms of the outcomes. And the area where we think there is great opportunity here relates specifically to the development and maintenance of green spaces in the urban environment, as well as waste management, specifically in the rural areas, where we believe that the community works program, if appropriately structured, can contribute to an outcome while creating meaningful jobs. In terms of the environment and culture sector, we've talked about that last time, but we are contributing to the creation of job opportunities, and this sector, as we've reported last week, is coordinated by the department. We've also finalized the environmental sector skills plan in the previous financial year, 2010-2011, for the entire sector, and that was in this financial year, followed by a specific strategy around human capital development for the biodiversity sector. And that strategy addresses attraction, upskilling, and retention, and reaches across from schooling through to higher education institutions into the workplace. We also have a follow-up program, not directly with the department, but that Sandy was successful in securing from the Jobs Fund to employ young graduates as part of a program leading on, and that's specifically based on the strategy and the implementation of the strategy. If we then talk about Action Area 7, just some of the achievements that we have allocated a budget. This is not a standard public works budget. It's from ourselves as well as supported by donor funding to install low-pressure solar water heaters as a pilot project in 2,400 low-cost houses in Stellenbosch. That process will run until June 2013. And already to date has created some work opportunities and full-time equivalents as indicated there. I think we're just highlighting this as an example. You would also be aware of, which will be in the detailed COP17 report, of the solar water heaters that was rolled out to clinics in KZN in the lead up to COP17. I think in terms of renewable energy, I'm talking about this a little bit later as well. This is an area where we have a regulatory role in terms of the rollout of the infrastructure for renewable energy. And as you would know, we often are blamed for delaying this development. And this target, this small statistic just indicates that there have probably been many unnecessary EIAs done, because the EIAs that we've authorized, or the capacity that was authorized through the EIA process, by far exceeds the target set by the Department of Energy for renewables. So although we are still in phase one of the refit tendering process, we've already exceeded the target for the total refit in terms of authorization. But in order for bidders to still compete, they have to, in terms of the requirements of the bidding process, have to have an environmental authorization before they can bid for the refit process. So everybody that has an interest to bid undergoes a potentially expensive EIA process with a consultation, creating expectations, etc., while only a limited number of those applications actually succeed through to implementation in terms of refit. But we have responded positively by expanding our capacity and working overtime in order to not be a restrictive but rather an enabling factor for the rollout of renewable energy, because we do support it very strongly in terms of sustainable development generally and specifically in terms of the response to climate change. An area of work that is just really emerging, Chair, and it's actually ties very nicely to your comments around the strategy for sustainable development and what does it actually mean in bringing everything together. This is a short-term project that we've embarked on which is doing exactly that. It's modeling what the long-term scenarios are based on the policies and strategy mix that we are implementing. So what are the likely impacts, and will we be reaching the goals and the targets that we set for ourselves if we implement, for example, the integrated resource plan, as well as the new growth path, as well as the infrastructure development plan, etc. And how does that impact on not only the environmental goals, but the goals in terms of society and the economy as well. And this process of modeling that we have launched at COP17, and we will have the first preliminary scenario report available towards March. The process that we are using is set up by the Millennium Institute, which is called the Threshold 21 approach, and it has been used internationally, and it's based on 20 years' worth of research in terms of the model that was historically used for sustainable development, where there was this three pillar society, economy, and environment as the spheres, with the sectors within it. You can have more sectors, it depends on what your country's priorities are, in that we would, for example, not have oil, we might have mineral resources, etc., sector within the economy. But it's then applied very much within what we've adopted, both in the framework for sustainable development as the strategy for sustainable development, of embeddedness. But it's not three pillars that's balancing something, that the economy is embedded in the socio-political system, which is embedded in the ecosystem services. And that is the approach that we've adopted, and that is what is used in this modeling system that the Threshold 21 is working in. It's a very consultative process, and where different stakeholders are brought together. We had the first conceptual meetings last year in September. We've launched the approach, and our partners, which is the University of Stellenbosch as well as the Millennium Institute. Professor Mark Swilling, for example, running with this process with us.
And you say you're going to develop the first model in time for the report in March this year?
Yes, that's the preliminary. The report on this process.
Where is it going to go?
Well, we will publish it and we will bring it to
a publication.
Yes, the publication. Yes.
Okay.
And Chair, this is very much tied to the strategy for sustainable development and bringing the implementation of the different policies and strategies of government into this modelling and scenario process in terms of where does our current path of action lead us to, potentially. So in conclusion, the green economy action has a number of cross-cutting roles and responsibilities, and that include the private sector, government, and civil society. The African continent must ensure that the green economy programs are to be supported by practical and implementable action plans. And that is important in terms of taking it to Rio Plus 20, is that we don't end up with an over-ambitious list of tasks that we agreed to, strategies and things that must be published and implemented and monitored, where there is not enough practical support in that regard. And then the whole thing in terms of building on existing best practices within our context and not applying best practices in a world that is not our context. Chair, I've included this for completeness sake, but this is what we have presented to you last week, which is talking, because we're doing this in the NTS cycles, it's not the 5 years that was spoken about last week, but the 3 years in the medium-term expenditure framework, and it talks about what the targets are and what we've achieved in the first year of that medium-term expenditure framework. I'm not going to go into that detail, we discussed it in quite a bit of detail also. I think what is, however, important is that there are additional jobs created that is not accounted for through the expanded public works program. And that includes civil service. We're not too worried about that because that is reported as part of the public service statistics, which is publicly available. But it is, there are also jobs that, due to the criteria set by the Standard Public Works, for example, we talked about the upper limit of salaries of 160 rand per day, which excludes some of the managerial and supervisors. Now, they have addressed that, but it will not come into effect in the current financial year, so from next financial year we will be able to count those jobs as well in Standard Public Works. The other area that we are working with is all the Department of Performance Management and Evaluation, Monitoring Evaluation, has been tasked to deal with is finding a criteria or a normal standard to measure the jobs created through other government programs or direct government investment. For example, we've quantified the solar projects, but we've used the Standard Public Works criteria. But there are other initiatives like the buyback centers, etc., like some of these greening initiatives, etc., which we are not yet quantifying the jobs that are being created and it is as direct result of government investment. Even where we award contracts and contractors then employ people to do work, that work is created as a result of government investment and is not yet a neat normal standard to measure those jobs that are being created, and we're working with DPME on those. If it then comes to the infrastructure part of the nation address, the President's call for the year 2012 and beyond to be invite the nation to join government in a massive infrastructure development drive. We have identified strategies towards ensuring that this infrastructure development is done, but not to the detriment of the environment and long-term sustainability. We do know that there's a lot of pressure with us in this regard, specifically in terms of the criticism against the environmental impact assessment process and the timelines around it. And therefore, we have, as we've worked with the committee extensively in 2008 and beyond, created a legislative framework in which we can streamline without losing the ability to ensure that negative impacts are minimized and positive impacts are maximized. So most of those activities that have been mentioned, I think it's also important to note that many of these things were announced but actually have a long history behind it already. The rail infrastructure and the water belt, for example, has been discussed with the department since 2009.
Obviously this is a vital job, and if we don't do it properly from your side, we can hold up the processes. Have we in any way analyzed the state of the nation in terms of infrastructure and the budgets, and have we looked at whether we've got the staff components to let it run smoothly? Is it going to need more? Are we going to have to get budgets for it? I mean, have we done that? I mean, you've written it here, but it doesn't indicate whether we, in our analysis, whether we think it's enough that we've got, or if we need more.
We are in the process of doing that, because as I've indicated, some of these things that have been announced have been in a process already. For example, in the Waterberg, we've done an environmental management framework, which enable quite quick and rapid decision making, because infrastructure development corridors, for example, has been identified, and where this and that has been done with Transnet and Water Affairs, with the augmentation system very closely involved in that process. So we are busy working through those five corridors and four major infrastructure developments that have been announced to see what has been done. And then we look at strategies that we have deployed previously. You may recall when the electricity crisis was there in 2009, we've adopted a very quick response approach, which we called the strategically important development approach, which was then partially funded by the Department of Public Enterprises to get additional staff on a short term and to get experts on board. So we're looking at which ones of these that would be necessary to, on a short-term basis, expand our capacity. But we are also looking at where it would not be necessary, because what is envisaged in 2009 when we changed the law, so so that we can use strategic instruments to streamline decisions, actually have reached that maturity. And when I present to you the list of environmental management frameworks, for example, that the minister has adopted nationally, you would see that for most of these areas, there's one or two maybe not covered, strategic environmental work has been done, which would set the context, for example, in terms of cumulative impact. There is more work that needs to be done in terms of really facilitating, but we're still doing that structuring, and we will then also again approach the main departments which remain actually Transnet and Eskom and Water Affairs mostly, in terms of revitalizing the strategically important development approach, which we have. It came to an end officially in 2011, but we've extended it with the Department of Public Enterprises around the renewables.
So when do you expect that assessment to be done?
The team is working on it now, Chair. By the time of the strategic plan, we can provide you with more detail on that. The 6th of March. I think just in terms of the framework, then, as I've indicated, when we've amended the Act, we looked at methods to either provide a context, and that specifically you may know, and when you get the detailed EIA briefing, this will come up again, that one of the main criticisms is that EIA is applied on a site basis and yet is supposed to take cumulative impact and cumulative benefits into account. But there's no strategic framework for that. So we've looked at the strategic framework, and we've looked at including norms and standards as the potential of excluding something from the requirement of an EIA if a standard is in place for it, guidelines to be kind of blueprints for what is required for what infrastructure, a big GIS system that looks at sensitive areas as specific required. And then I've talked about the specific dispensation around strategically important development. One area that we are also working on and that the Minister is very passionate about, and yourself, Chair, mentioned it last year as well, is the issue around integrated permitting. And we are working with Water Affairs specifically on at least integrating water licensing with environmental permitting process. So we are working on all of those areas, the strategic environmental assessments, the GIS. We already have the sensitive areas, GIS concluded. We have quite a few environmental management frameworks in place with associated environmental management plans. And these instruments are widely consulted in their development phase. So that also then reduces the surprise element at site level when these new developments come up. And then we are also working specifically on a strategic environmental management framework for the renewable energy applications to have a more strategic approach. There is a concern specifically in the scenic part of the country around the impact of, for example, wind farms on tourism potential in areas that are high scenic beauty. And that is obviously something that we cannot just shoot down as not applicable. The GIS system I've spoken about, I'm going to not go into detail in detail. I want to talk a little bit about this EMF because I'm not going to talk about all of them in the same detail, but I think the Waterberg Environmental Management Framework demonstrates the potential of this tool to show what are the critical elements that is important, what are desirable land use practices and what are undesirable land use practices in specific environment management zones. Those are the details specifically around the Waterberg, the Lepalale district municipality area, and after a very extensive process, we came up with 11 management zones, which kind of say what are the desirable use and what management practices need to be in place. And you will see there, and this is now again linking back to the State of the Nation address, that there are areas, for example, where we say that mining in that specific zone for coal would be more desirable than mining coal in the wetland areas of Mpumalanga, which is far more threatened. So I think it's also enabling in terms of the extractive industry where there is.
Could you explain briefly the GIS to me?
What the GIS instrument does is to, on land parcel level, so on cadastral level, the slides will show what it means in terms of this EMF, but the GIS instrument maps all the sensitive areas from an ecological perspective as the first layer. And as discussed with you last year, we will then overlay it with, we already have the water areas. The one area that is difficult to find information on is the minerals. But we do, or at a refined enough scale. But we do have high-level geological maps that give you a general indication of what the minerals are. But we do have, in the GIS, put that as well as the current land use. We also, in some areas, we don't have it everywhere, but in Gauteng, for example, we have the areas that are highly polluted, or what we call the buffer zones around areas like landfill sites and high industries, etc., is also indicated there because that's important for social development, for example. You don't want to put low-cost housing or school right next to healthcare risk waste incinerator, as an example. We don't have that information everywhere, but where we do have it, we have it. And then it's divided in land parcels, and if you click on a land parcel, it tells you what are the environmental impact assessment requirements applicable to that land parcel. If there is an environmental management framework in place for that area, it will also direct you to the management plans and the management zones for that EMS. So it's quite an exciting instrument where things going forward in terms of providing baseline information, but also streamlining the
put that also under our oversight issues, okay? Look at that.
If we then look at this EMF specifically, the role that it will play in this specific instance is three major infrastructure and developmental issues coming from the State of the Nation address that link specifically to the water work. The one relates to the rail infrastructure, which is directly linked to the coal mining in the area, and the third one relates to the augmentation of water. So those three major infrastructure developments were known when the EMF was done, and this provides now a framework. So if we look at some of the maps that we have in there, the very famous Lephalala. Biosphere Reserve with its incredible important work being done on the black rhinoceros is part of this area, and those areas highlighted in dark green is where the Biosphere Reserve is. This is showing you the detail of which this is done. What is indicated on this map is the farm cadastre. So you can exactly see to what detail we are going in this. That one shows a land cut, and that's very much based on soil and vegetation. This one is a bit of an environmental analysis, which talk about different areas of sensitivity, and it then leads to more and more intensity in terms of where the sensitive areas are. From a biodiversity perspective, you can see that the sensitive areas are very much conserved already through the biosphere reserve. It's also luckily not an area that is very mineral rich, and there is limited development pressure on the areas that is of high ecological sensitivity in the Waterberg reserve. I think what is important to note is that what is unique about this area is that it also has severe cross-boundary impact, because there's also quite extensive coal fields just across the boundary in Botswana, and that is also being mined extensively, and there's three major power stations planned on the Botswana side. So there is an international static consideration that is also important here. What we haven't mentioned is that there's also a plan to declare the area as the next priority. It's the first proactive air quality hotspot, air quality management area, like the Highveld currently is, but it is a there's not yet an air quality problem in this area, but in terms of the IRP and the growth, new growth path projections, this is an area that has potential to become air quality hotspot as well, not only as a result of our own coal-fired station and the potential for liquid to fuel plants, the Mafuta plant, which has been put on hold but might still happen in the long term, and then the coal-fired power stations in Botswana. Air does have the habit of not really honouring boundaries, so it is an area of concern for us. There's also a World Bank study into this area from that perspective. This is in terms of it is called the Waterberg, although it is a very dry province. This is the water machine of the province, which mostly don't drain towards the side that we need the water in, but the Waterberg is a very important catchment as well. So there are sensitivities, and again, it coincides very clearly with the ecological sensitive areas. And that's just an example. I don't want to elaborate on it too much. What I want to demonstrate is the value of an instrument like an environmental management framework, and especially if we could manage to build it into the spatial development framework of the municipality, which then inform all land use decisions, would be optimal for us. And now I'm canvassing a bit, because this is important when we come to the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Bill, which will be before Parliament soon, where we need to make these influence, these links, the strategic links to land use development. That shows the infrastructure, and it shows the water augmentation very specifically, because water affairs were part of the steering committee and used this process more extensively than Transnet did. Transnet did provide some input, but did not really get to the alternative levels like water affairs did. So in terms of the water augmentation system,
what is that actually?
Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Bill.
Spatial?
It would be in the Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. It is the bill that is to replace the Development Facilitation Act.
Spatial
Planning and Land Use Management Board.
Yeah. Okay.
And see, that last slide will just show the environmental management zones. Those zones that I've talked about, you will see that big grey area just below Lepalale, which I must just say is my hometown, so I'm very sad about that area, but that is the area where we say mining should be prioritized, and then the rest of the land uses are indicated there in terms of the preferred land use. There's quite a big focus on the green industries or the eco industries, and then you will see the corridors there already for the rail. So we think that in this instance the environmental impact assessment process shouldn't pose significant delays, etc., because there's been huge public consultation around this process already. Then in terms of other environmental management frameworks that have been developed, I think I must just caution that some of these were developed before 2008, and the level of detail is not as good as the detail is in for example, the one that we have plans with all of the provinces in terms of the 5-year review and the refinement of these. But you will see, Chair, if I go through the list of two slides, we will also in our strategic planning presentation show these on a map of where they are, where we actually do have environmental management frameworks in place. I think just interesting is that the Western Cape, not the one that is there, but there is one that was done by the City of Cape Town that has been adopted both as a spatial development framework and an environmental management framework, which is ideal because we're then seeing from the same theme sheet in terms of decision making. The other, we talked about norms and standards. There's a provision in the Act that can allow for exclusion of an activity based on an approved standard and compliance to that standard. And we think that this would typically be applicable to your smaller development activities and where you have small-scale renewable energy, for example. If it is done, again, in the context of a strategic framework, the need for an individual EIA falls away. I've talked about the environmental framework for the energy applications. That is something that we are fast-tracking to have in place sooner rather than later and to focus not only on wind but also on solar. So that is one of our fast-track programs that have been budgeted for fast-tracking. Then there's the guidelines. I'm not going to talk to this in detail. I just want to, that slide I've shown before, that is just in terms of phase one, what we've already approved. The strategically important development initiative, there's a guideline in place for this, and it avails a shortened but equally thorough EIA process because what we cut down on is the time that is taken authority to make decision and review, not on the time to do the actual work in preparing it. And that is enabled through additional capacity of high-level people that are experts in the field, and for in terms of constant training of case officers and development of sector-specific guidelines. So we are implementing it for the DPEs, state of enterprises, but there is certainly opportunity to expand. We asked for in 2009, we actually went to the infrastructure cluster with a request for additional funds to expand this, and it was turned down. So we will now be approaching individual departments to contribute to the fund in order to expand this to at least all government infrastructure projects. In terms of COP17, the President has reflected on the success by indicating that the outcome was historic, the President setting ranking with the 1997 conference on Kyoto. The Durban negotiated outcome therefore advances the global effort to address the global climate change challenge by addressing the now and the future of the regime, and work in 2012 will focus on towards COP18 to secure and build the implementation of the Durban outcome. The awareness campaign and the CTR Expo increased the reach and enhanced the understanding of climate change, and it serves as a basis for further consolidation on the subject. And then, of course, the Greening and Legacy project was successfully implemented, and we would brief you on the details of this, hopefully tomorrow. For 2012-13, the priority for the branch is, in addition to the implementation or the buy-in to the COP17 outcome, is to implement the white paper. With the sector carbon budgets and the flagship program for framework of mitigation, the long-term adaptation scenarios for the adaptation sectors and tools for disaster risk management, development of the monitoring, review, and verification system, and the framework covering mitigation adaptation.
I know you don't like putting boring things there, but I must say to you that one of your priorities there has to be the structures you want to create. All this is not going to work if you don't have the structures.
Institutional arrangements.
So that could be a priority. I know you don't put boring things there, but really, in June I want to see those things up and running.
Yeah, I think the last bullet kind of talked to that, because it talked about the Intergovernmental Committee on Climate Change and the National Committee on Climate Change, which is where the substance is.
All of them.
Then Rio Plus 20, the President linked the COP70 with her to chair. The President linked very much the COP17 success with Rio Plus 20. We are very excited about Rio Plus 20, not because it's Rio Plus 20, but because it is WSSD Plus 10. And one of our main aims in going to to Rio+20 well prepared and with a clear strategy in this regard is to make sure that the WSSD+10 legacy does not die because the focus is on Rio+20. And it is for us, it is about the future that we want. So this is again the board list of chair, but the UN General Assembly resolution of March 2010 announced that Rio+20 would take place, that it would be a conference and not the normal commission meeting, and it will happen in Brazil from 20 to 22 June. And that is the high level segment of the conference, which are heads of state orientated and operating ministers. The Rio+20 will seek to secure renewed political commitment for sustainable development and to assess the progress and the implementation gaps in meeting the previously agreed commitment and address the new and emerging challenges. The theme, as I've indicated before, is the green economy and the institutional framework for sustainable development, and looking at the efficiency and effectiveness of the institutional framework. Just in terms of the history, Stockholm could ask, why wasn't it Stockholm+30? Because this actually started in 1972, in the Stockholm Conference. In 1992, we then had the famous Rio Conference with the three Rio Conventions, which is the Convention on Climate Change, the Convention on Biodiversity and on Combating Desertification, and the Commission on Sustainable Development. Then we have in 2000 the Millennium Summit with the Millennium Development Goals, and in 2002 we have the World Summit on Sustainable Development, with the very important Johannesburg Plan of Implementation, where this notion of a strategy for sustainable development as a delivery for countries came from. Chair, you would note that it took us 9 years, almost a decade, to meet that requirement of having a strategy for sustainable development, which we committed to in 2000. It wasn't an easy task. And then in 2012, the Rio+20. Between the Johannesburg Summit and Rio+20, there were the themes of the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation were taken two or three themes per year as the focus area of the Commission. So part of Rio+20 would be to see back in terms of the progress on those thematic areas. The structure of the conference, there would be a formal plenary, but it will be preceded by two meetings. The one is the Dialogue on Sustainable Development, and before that will be the third preparatory meeting leading to the conference itself, basically where the text gets developed. It's talking in negotiation terms. The expected outcomes is a political declaration focusing on the themes and objectives of the conference, to have a framework of action on the green economy, and to have a framework of action in terms of the institutional framework for sustainable development, and very importantly, the means of implementation for Rio+20. Those of you that follow the CSD debate last year would remember that the Commission of Sustainable Development failed to reach an agreed text in the previous round, and it was all around the means of implementation. There was no agreement in terms of the means of implementation. From an African perspective, and this has been discussed in the structures in the continent, that is, and the AU, we believe and subscribe to Africa's position that we want the equity, the inclusion of social dimensions in the context of the green economy implementation to be underlined by the national objectives and developmental imperatives, enhanced coherence, efficiency, and more effective governance in the UN system. We see increased fragmentation as well as consolidation in some areas but not in others, and that obviously has implications in terms of the effectiveness and the cost of the UN system. And then the enhanced means to implement the outcomes on Rio+20, finance, technology, cooperation, capacity building. which is indicated is probably the most difficult aspect, because it is on these grounds that the CSD 19 basically failed. Enhancement of public-private partnerships and cooperation. So this is an area where we can build on the legacy of WSSD, where there was that form of partnership. In terms of Team South Africa at Leo Plus 20, the President said, building on the success of COP17, South Africa will participate in the Rio Plus 20 Summit in Brazil, which marks the 10th anniversary of the World Summit on Sustainable Development. I think it's important that we remind ourselves of the beautiful logo that we have for WSSD and the People, Planet and Prosperity theme. We have established the intergovernmental framework working groups in which all the departments that have a role to play is involved. We have a couple since last year already. We have meetings in this regard, preparation. We are participating in international preparation meetings, both in the continent and in the groups of 77, in the preparation for this. We then also nationally have the working meetings, 9 February, and then its monthly meetings leading up to Rio. We include multi-stakeholder consultations, which include the private sector, the NGOs, labor, civil organization, academia, research institutions. If you just indicate that in the interdepartmental working groups, we have included SALGA and Cities Network because of the very strong Agenda 21, local Agenda 21 focus, and they are part of our partners in this work. The first multi-stakeholder workshop took place on the 14th of February, and there is open dialogue on Rio Plus 20 in April, and we hope that that would be after the principal country position has been through cabinet. That dial preparatory work of that is perfect. Then there is the Interministerial Committee. We work through the ICTS cluster and cabinet in our preparation for Rio Plus 20. In terms of the formal negotiations, DIA is the focal point and will take the lead. We will not take a very big delegation for the delegation purpose, or for the negotiation purposes, because there is only those two focal areas, and it would be no more than 15 negotiators that will be participating as the South African delegation in the actual negotiation. We are also looking at Brazil has informed us that based on their observations at COP17, they are planning an expo similar to what we have had at COP17, and we believe that there is a lot of material from COP17, specifically in terms of, for example, the Rio Pavilion, and some of the stands that are ready to use, again, that we can export to Brazil to be reused in this thing. So we will be working with the sector department based on all the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation chapters to prepare participation in the expo. The financial implications of that we don't know yet. We believe that a lot of the material is ready and easy to recycle, but we will also be working with partners in order to make this a reality and to reuse what we've already built for COP17. In terms of mining, I think what is important is that, again, I spoke to this previously, but the whole issue in terms of competing land uses and how do we facilitate mining, which is an important sector of our economy, while ensuring the sustainability of our ecosystem. And we've been working with the Department of Minerals and Energy, Mineral Resources now, my apologies, in terms of three areas. The one is looking at integrating and aligning permitting processes, but then also in terms of providing information that would inform decision-making, which includes the sensitivity mapping that we've talked about previously, as well as guidelines in terms of mining and biodiversity, and some of the work that we've done in terms of heritage impact assessments and offsets that resulted from the Vele coal mine in the Makamkukwe in the vicinity of
that legislation they were pushing on their own.
Chair, we do not know when, but it will also be coming through Parliament probably in the next term.
Once the cabinet is.
No.
Okay.
So that is where it is. So the implications of the mining focus is that we are also a key contributor to the new growth path through ecotourism, agriculture, the wildlife economy, the green economy, and we need to make sure that the one sector doesn't compromise the ability of the other sector in terms of the green economy, the growth path of the country. We have five major geographically focused programs that will be announced in terms of regional integration, the Transfrontier Conservation Areas and the Boundless South Africa program, and there is areas where large infrastructure programs can be incorporated in this. It's not necessarily competing, and it could be contributing to the accessibility of these things. We talked about the Green Paper on Land Reform, on which we need to look at specifically in terms of the land claims in protected areas and the role of biodiversity stewardship programs in land reform sites. While restitution should be awarded, whether we can use the stewardship program to still have the land conserved as per our targets. And then there's the important role in terms of social cohesion. And there's a specific link made in terms of the benefits. What is that called? Benefits access sharing. That is important in terms of specifically the Khoisan community. Chair, as I said, there are other indirect areas, for example, in terms of equity, the integrated waste management plan, which we will expand on in great detail when we do that. Thanks, Chair.
Now, that's a very thoughtful input, I thought. It's exactly what we're looking for, a department that takes the state of the nation, analyzes it, and see how it fits in a plan, where their weaknesses, where their... That's exactly why we're doing this. So I thought it was a very thoughtful DG, very thoughtful input. But we will now engage members want to ask. There is tea outside, but we have time constraints, so I think just get your tea and so on. General, you can start first.
Thank you, Chairperson, colleagues, and the department. Don't you think that you would gain more as a department if you were to transfer the National Sustainable Unit or Commission so as to improve, to integrate the policies of environment and also take advantage that the Planning Commission is being run at the Office of the President, as I believe that the policies will be monitored from that department through the Planning Commission. Secondly, what is the department's proposed way forward for after COP17 in order for the South Africans to benefit and understand what was discussed, because 9 out of 10 times we always do well when we host the international conferences, but immediately after that the whole thing dies down, and there are programs which I think should be unpacked for the benefit of South Africans, especially after President Zuma had committed this country in Copenhagen on the reduction of carbon emissions. Are we satisfied with the process that far? Who's monitoring that? Are we sure that, for instance, our business people do understand such things as CDM, the process of claiming these monies from the International Green Fund. Because the report I read is that only about 7 last year who claimed, but others would like, but I don't think they are aware what process. Do we have carbon check institutions to assist them? Lastly, what I would suggest is that maybe we need our own national conference on climate change to unpack the resolutions, the implications, and also to look into the current white paper with a view tabled between that conference, with a view to unpack it for the population and explain to the people. Out of that, we need to agree on an institution which will drive this. It's not going to help to just say there is a committee of certain departments. But if you, for instance, we have a national council on climate change, out of that you can have a team running to drive that, as well as to have our own green fund. Because currently we are deducting money from the new cars. Where does that money go to? What is it doing? On the other hand, when you look at the countryside, the desertification is approaching, or slowly, it's marching slowly towards Pretoria.
Thank you, General. Just to remind members, of course, the assessment on COP17, we've agreed with the department that they're not going to speak in public until it's gone through cabinet. It's going through cabinet tomorrow, so hopefully from tomorrow onwards that will be available to us. And if we can fit that input in tomorrow after the other input, then the only reason is there are 2 or 3 departments that are involved, so they first want a cabinet position before they publicly start making announcements. Okay, any other questions? Ma Manganya, Mr. Morgan, Dr. Juan.
Thank you, Chair. My question, I don't know if I've deviated from what the presenter was saying in this proposal that she's making here. I wanted to ask, how is the relationship with the private sector? Why I'm asking this question? Really, it seems somewhere, somehow, the EIA is not done when this mining is done, when the mining are erected. I don't see if it was done. If it was done, the community around where the mine is built, just inside the village, they were going to be consulted and be told that this is what is happening. Secondly, if this the EIA, it was happening down in the provinces or in the municipalities, we couldn't have the mine dump just around the school and then the waste or the tires that they are from underground just around the school. I don't see it happening. So I wanted to be assisted by this Department of Environment because I need to answer some of the questions in my constituency. So every time when I go out, I needed to apologize because the school is asking me, did you present our concern to the...
Give an example where so that they know what you mean.
Just right in Rustenburg, the place called Meridi, there is the school called Bana Bailey. Always when this mine is bringing this dump, they don't come to school. They have to be rushed out of school because it's a small. Unfortunately, I didn't bring
the picture
that we took. I was already
terrible.
Yeah, very terrible. I was there. I even also ran. They say, this is what we are doing almost. When you try to contact the people that they think, they say is the one that are doing this the inspector from the mine, you can't get hold of them. So I brought it to the environment that they must look into that issue so that we must assist the community, because it was said it's closed, but it's still operating. Time again, they are dealing, and then nothing is happening. So I support this issue of interdevelopmental whatever sector, because if we the other one is doing their own thing in that corner, the other one in that corner won't come together, especially energy, mining and environment and water. These four departments, I think, according to me, we need to work hand in hand, because the other one is increasing on top of the other one. The other one doing this, the other one is doing the opposite thing. So I don't know if we are going or we are coming. It affected also, because I don't want to ask again, maybe the water department is going to say something, because it's still very the same thing. I rush in and out of this meeting, because people now, they have 3 weeks without having water. No one is telling what is happening. I've been phoning the MEC and the mayor now to say, did you resolve the issue? Because people now, the people are no longer, their eyes are wide open. They can do the emailing, they can phone, they can go to the constituency and ask, where can we get assistance? So now I think this thing that is raised here in the, especially this issue of water, I think we are still lagging behind. Because if we when we talk about the water, we talk about urban and cities, it means we are not there. Mina, I don't agree to it that we have done a lot. If we have done a lot in terms of water, people in the rural areas, they couldn't cry like this. We should have done something if there is no water. Chairperson, I want also to be assisted in this process. The treaty that we are taking. If somebody going into the department and take treaty without consulting maybe the premier in that area or people who are just in that area. Because I don't think we can stay without water while we've got water in the area. But because of the treaty that we have taken, where the water is going somewhere, the people who are supposed to get the water, the dam is there, there's no water that is coming to the people. I mean, I think I need to be, maybe to be enlightened, because I don't understand the issue of treaty taking water to other countries while the dam is in the, or that particular river is in their poor. People couldn't get the water because the water is taken to Botswana. So I need to be told so that I must also be able to answer the question. I'm sorry if I disappeared from what you wanted me to ask.
Slightly, but that's fine. Can I suggest you have a good chance today with these two DGs? They both, yeah? Don't let them leave here without you giving them specifics so they can give you a response to those specific problems, okay? Please, DG, don't run away before you speak to Mark. Mr. Morgan?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me associate myself with your comments on the presentation. I thought it was an excellent presentation. And I think you probably put quite considerable pressure on your sister department, the water department, to deliver as good a presentation. And thank you for the level of detail. It indicates a thoughtful department is really engaged with the issues. The other thing, of course, which is good to see, I mean, you said you started at the in your initial comments saying that the president says the nation is generally in alignment with the program of action, and that is evident. You can't point to this level of else, and I know that I'm probably saying what many of you think. There's excellent work going on in this department, and you know, matters like the environmental management frameworks, which you use, a very good example of an environmental management tool that is already in place, at least in the Waterford, to the standard that you want it to be, shows that decision making in the future around big infrastructure projects will be that little bit easier. The substantial point I wanted to make, though, was that no matter how good this department is, you will continually, and I don't want you to, hit your head up against policy coordination issues and implementation issues. I mean, as you've noted yourself, the EMF is an excellent management tool, but doesn't mean it's necessarily integrated with IDPs. Another greater concern to me is just because there's an EMF, doesn't mean that the Department of Mineral Resources has to agree with, you know, where you should be directing mining and where you should not be directing mining. It's a constant problem. I mean, as you know, the Department of Mineral Resources is in the Constitutional Court now, arguing about whether it has the right to effectively overrule zoning ordinances in the sense that it believes it can. So it's a big issue because, of course, besides from the infrastructure, the big news of the State of the Nation is that besides from the infrastructure push, which is, you know, welcome, there is a significant push to mining in South Africa as well. And that's not a surprise. I mean, the new growth path, which was presented to this committee round about this time last year by the then Deputy Minister Godongwana, pointed quite significantly towards the push to mine. One of the concerns, I know that you are really trying your hardest, and I really appreciate all of your efforts to engage with the Department of Mineral Resources on the issue of mining. And I mean, I say that with sincerity. And the real concern I have is that the longer it takes to work out who should be the authorising agent, I mean, as you know, the previous legislation, which I wasn't commenced, ultimately made the Minister of Environmental Affairs the authorising for mines. It just was never commenced, as I said. But the longer it takes to sort this out, the longer it takes to sort out integrated permitting, in the interim, the more new order mining rights are going to get awarded. I'm pretty convinced that the vast majority of new order mining rights which are going to exist for the next 20, 30 years are currently being given or are going to be awarded in the next year or two. So it's all fine and well saying, you know, we need improved coordination, and I know you really want to. But I fear that you are being strung along here by a department that is mineral resources, which knows that it is on the push to mine. I mean, it's quite happy, no doubt, to hand over the responsibility sometime in the future, but by that stage, the horse is bolted. So that is a concern of mine, and let me just reiterate, I know that you are really trying to do your best, but I'm generally concerned about it because a well-intentioned department that is instituting all the best management tools, and you clearly have that desire, still has to come up against other spheres of government and other departments. And perhaps I should just, you know, accept that, you know, you're doing your job and you're providing frameworks for decision making. But that's the real problem, because that's where the issue of sustainability actually lies. You might be tasked with managing sustainability, at least from a monitoring point of view, and attempting to direct developments in certain places. You're also going to probably be criticised for what isn't achieved or where there are regional problems. But sustainable development is everyone's business. And so, I mean, I want to encourage you, and I think we'd like you to report back as much as possible on where you are engaging with all the other departments and where they actually are problems with regards to to buying into the concept of sustainability. I'm not convinced that the strategy on sustainability has got terribly far. It was a major outcome of WSSD in 2002. And as far as I'm aware, and I've seen this issue with you before, it's never been sort of formally housed. It doesn't formally have resonance in other departments across government. And the worry I have is that it sends all the wrong signals, the strategy of sustainable development, about the possible successes of the implementation of the white paper on climate change, which suffers from exactly the same, I'd say problems, but challenges, which is transversal management, the ability to integrate a response to a major, major issue, of which I don't think this government has ever encountered an issue as big as climate change. So I'd appreciate, you know, your comments on policy coordination and transversal management in response to this, because my general point is, yes, great presentation, I know you guys are genuine, but you know, you are not responsible entirely for all of these functions of environmental management. And the last point is, which we can engage with in substance when you come and present the budget, is, so I won't talk about the money now, I'll hold that off for another 2 weeks, but really whether you are up to the challenge in terms of the capacity and the human resource capacity to respond to the President's sona with regards to those nine functions which are yours. It's an issue which was raised extensively around the sona, was whether, of course, the country has sufficient capacity in this regard. You have particular line functions. Are you up to the challenge? Are there any particular concerns that you have around this? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Huang.
Thank you, Chairperson. Of course, I appreciate it for the Parliament this very deep previous documentation for the presentation. I think it's, the Parliament's response to the SONA is, I think, is a key issue is how to the job creation is go to respond to the President with job creation. From the your 9 key focus area, I'd like to know SONA for the President say 2011 is created for 300,000 jobs. But I'd like to know from the Parliament side, 2011, for your department, is how many jobs is actually is created. Because your job creation is including your person date and FTE. So I'd like to know, because the President in the SONA said 300,000 jobs, I think this is a full-time job. Not a temporary or this person day job. And from your 9 key focus area, the second one is for the waste management. You highlight is a zero waste community program. I'd like to know how you can achieve to the zero waste community program. This one, this program also linked to the EPWP. From the your EPWP job and green economy contribution, I saw that this one is job creation is about it's a full time is 21,000 jobs only for 2011. So if we say this one from the your I think it's a page 11 presentation is copy this on page 11 12. These three differences is the wasting on the waste and the water and the fire. This total is job creation full time. I asked about 21,000. Depending to the department, them is, I think, the link to the EPWP job create. And my core concern is actually the job date. So I like the, from the department side, from the UN9 key focus, it's very important, it's the 9 key focus. This area is actually 2014 is our government target is 5 million job opportunity in the 2014. Now already coming to 2012. So past is past, 2011 is past. I like to know from this year to 2014, what target for the department side? How you can achieve to the your target? And the focus for the UN9 key focus area. Then I think this one is very important. I think that also your presentation, additional job create, for the reason for people earning between the 63 rand to the 160 rand. I see the last meeting that you highlighted for the wage from the 60 rand to the 80 rand. How you can come to the 160 rand for this people can earn this amount. This amount is for person day or the full time is the payment of the day. I never saw that it's 160 rand for one day for the EPWP. This program can get 160 rand for one day. This one is my question. And also, Chairperson, regarding for the renewable energy, for the CEA has already authorized more wind, solar, PV, and the CSP than more than the DOE, Department of Energy, target. So allow the close the refit one. The total approved for the 10,545 megawatts, but actually the price is double, 26,526 megawatts. I want to know is from the Department of the Environmental, you have the authority for this power. You can approve the more that is applied or the must through to the refit. This one confusion to me is because DOE is approved only for 12,000 megawatts. But I think it's passed to the day target. So now it's applied 26,526 megawatts. I want to know what the actual for this is. And this one,
the one amount is what energy department set.
Yeah.
The other amount is what our department has been able to approve and allow to happen. And the point they're making is that they've approved more than even the targets of the Department of Energy.
And the chip was
so that's what that slide says.
Yes, my point. If like the chairperson replied, I want to know this department from the renewable energy and how many jobs can create. If like this actually, what is this price?
Okay, they may not be able to answer that because that will be the Department of Energy, but let them try. Edwenga?
Thank you, Chair. I noticed the EMSs that have already been developed and adopted. I would like to know, are there any further plans to increase on these? Because there are other areas of hotspots in the country, such as Tobolo. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Scortana. Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me forward my apology for fighting this time due to some commitment. But Chairperson, I was listening very attentively when my colleagues were asking questions. And I want to compare with General Kolomisa to say, one day we must have a national conference on issues related to climate change so that we can unpack these things. And Chairperson, on the reduction of carbon emissions, and after the President has announced the reduction of carbon emissions, I want to know how far have we gone sure that this involvement continues. It should be a continuing issue. And also the ownership of the climate change by South Africans. Because it seems some members of this country, when you talk about climate change, maybe they just take it as a matter of the officials or politicians or whatever. I should think we need to make sure that we conscientize everybody to make an ownership of this thing. And Chairperson, on Saturday I left certain area between Medulet and Wisden called the Arnold Mines, what. And in that area, Chairperson, there is a lot of pollution to the land where the mill is planted. I just want to know, how do we deal with such matters? Because even that mill, which is planted there, it has changed its color. Because trucks are passing at the end of that landfill where this mill is planted. And the mill has turned its color, it's black now. No more green mill, it tends to be black. And it's part of air pollution, but I just want to know, how do we deal with such matters? And I should think there are a lot of areas.
Delivery agreement is signed by all ministers and departments that are contributing to that. And the National Strategy for Sustainable Development is part of the delivery of Outcome 10. So the ministers that have a role to play in the implementation of the NSSD is, and also similarly with the policy on climate change, is signatories to the Outcome 10 delivery agreement. So I think although we still have a way to go in that regard, the establishment of these two sections in the presidency is starting to aid that coordination of inputs in terms of being one government with different focuses. The COP17 chair, I'll leave to the DG and the DDG for climate change to respond to. In terms of the details of Mamunganye, we'll get to the details when we have the bilateral afterwards, but I just want to indicate that her concern raised to us is exactly at the heart of our concern about the regulatory environment around mining. The environmental impact assessment process conducted for mining is not managed or falling within the mandate of the Department of Environmental Affairs. It's managed through the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act by the Department of Mineral Resources. The department is a commenting authority unless a separate listed activity is undertaken, which is mostly coincidental to the mining and not the mining itself. So the response that you got, that it is the mine inspector that needs to take up the complaints, is legally the correct response, and that is actually at the heart of the dilemma in terms of environmental management around mining. There are, however, areas of influence in terms of, for example, the Air Quality Act, etc., where we can at least influence how that is managed. But we will follow up with you in terms of the circumstances around Banafeli. In terms of Honourable Morgan's contributions, I think I think that is why I'm canvassed for the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Bill, because it is there where the links are going to be made in terms of spatial planning and land use development areas. And there has been big debates both with Department of Mineral Resources around mining, with ourselves in terms of environmental planning, and also with the Department of Agriculture in terms of the default zonation of land as agriculture. So the importance of that piece of legislation working cannot be overemphasized, because it's supposed to be that platform where you can deal with competing land uses, because competing land uses have equal right to compete for the land use, and that must be facilitated. I think I've responded to the issue in terms of the policy coordination and transversal implementation issue. In terms of getting to the human resources, I think once we've done that detailed assessment, because the area where we are concerned about is in terms of the regulatory requirements. Of course, we don't have to build the infrastructure, so that capacity is not our side, although we would prefer that they use the labor-intensive methodologies, and that there would be opportunities at least as part of the infrastructure development for the expanded public works program to benefit the poor. But in terms of human resources, I think we would need to do that assessment, and it would depend in terms of how far along the strategic processes are, as well as how far along what is our capacity. What we are lucky to an extent, and it was not mentioned by the committee, but the biggest delays that are experienced in terms of EIAs are where the province is the competent authority. In most of these major infrastructure developments that have been announced by the president, the competent authority would be the national department. And we do have the systems and the access to additional resources to expand at least our human resource capacity. In terms of honorable calling, I think I need to explain again that the 9 focus areas is the 9 focus areas of the green economy, and that the department is not responsible for implementation of all of them. I've mentioned the areas where we are responsible for implementation of them and have indicated what the job creation methods are and where our challenges are when falls outside of expanded public works to quantify the jobs that have been created, and that we are working with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation to set a standard to measure those jobs that fall outside of the expanded public works. In terms of the President's announcement, and we've talked about it last week and we will expand about it next week as well, it is our understanding what the President announced and our contribution as a sector and as a department are full-time equivalents. So it is those jobs that are equivalent to a full-time job would be the ones that we've contributed. Our statistics that we've provided with the asterisk next week, which is the same as last week, what we presented last week, is the full-time equivalent as well as the job opportunities up to the end of December. We've indicated that it's not being verified because we don't do that verification. That verification is done by the Department of Public Works, and that is where the argument between 63 and 160 rand per day comes in, because expanded public works only counts jobs where the daily rate is between 63 and 160 rand per day. We have supervisors that earn more than 160 rand per day, which is not included in the figure that is in that amount that we've indicated. The range between 63 and 160 depends on the job that the person do and at what the implementing agent who is employing these contractors indicates what the nature of the job is as well as the benefits. And as we've indicated in our program, there are only a very few that fall at the bottom edge. They are mostly around 80 rand per day as an average, but there are people that earn as much as 160 or more than 160 rand per day. What the discussion with Treasury was is to make that 160 rand upper limit fall away so that we can count all the jobs. But of course, if you make the translation back into the budget available, the higher the amount per day gets, the less jobs will be created because the budget remains relatively fixed. In terms of the zero waste community project, that is a program. When we presented last year in February, we indicated that we have put out an expression of interest, and it was mostly private sector people that came up with provisions that ultimately, when we have the financial mechanism in place, both from the Green Fund as well as the donor support, which we can then support with seed funding or short-term grants. And this zero waste community initiative is one such initiative which is earmarked for an implementation of a project which in the long term can become bankable and then compete for other resources after we provided the initial seed funding. So I think it's something that is a concept that we want to be further explored because we believe that it has merit. In terms of calculating the jobs around the renewable energy, again, that will be calculated probably by the Department of Energy, who is doing this, apart from when it's an initiative that we fund, like we did with the solar panels that we did. We would say, in terms of that initiative funded by ourselves, these are the jobs that we've created. The indirect jobs that we've created in terms of our regulatory function is not calculated there. For example, that there is an environmental assessment practitioner that conducts the environmental impact assessment study. Those things are not being calculated in any way currently. In terms of the targets that we set, what what the environmental impact in terms of what was said by energy and what was achieved in terms of our authorization, what the department, there's a need for an environmental authorization if you build, for example, a solar plant, and if somebody applies to us, we cannot say we will not consider your application. Our approval, however, doesn't mean that it will realize on the ground, because that is dependent on whether they get the funding through the refit process. So of all the applications that we've approved, for example, and I have the figures somewhere, but I'm not consistent, the applications that were submitted to us in the refit phase one, we've approved something in the order of 200 and something individual applications, and only 33 of them, if I can verify the figures when we present to you, was actually approved in the refit one. So, yes, we do have the authority and we actually have the obligation to consider every application that we receive, but the Department of Energy is under no obligation to give them the necessary permission to proceed. So I think that is what I can say in terms of that. But what the point is that we've spent resources and money, and applicants have spent resources and money to obtain an environmental authorization in order to compete for refit, which might be better around if they think only the preferred bidder should be subjected to an environmental impact assessment process. In terms of Mzengo, in terms of the EMS, yes, we have a strategy together with the provinces in terms of ultimately building a puzzle of the entire country to have border-to-border environmental management framework. Wall-to-wall, that's the correct word, environmental management framework. We've decided to start, and this is discussed with the provinces, on the areas where there is the highest development pressure coupled with the highest environmental sensitivity to, in terms of spending our resources more equally. For the VAR, there is actually partially covered in terms of the Imfuleni environmental management framework, and there's also one under development for the southern VAR area. The big thing is to remember that these things are incredibly, you can gather from the environment. We didn't tell you the cost of the waterbed environmental management framework. It can be incredibly high if there's no basic information, if we actually have to develop the basic information. The waterbed environmental management framework cost 5 million rand, which was it seems small to some people. For us, it's a lot of money, but it was co-sponsored by us, the province, and the municipality. In terms of the climate change, I'll leave that to DG. I think that's all the
DG, quickly, we've run out of time rapidly.
Okay. I thought that Julie was just going to quickly run through the two questions on climate.
Just very briefly, because that stuff we'll look at tomorrow, and okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I think, there were a couple of questions, but just to touch on them very briefly. In respect of the way forward and the areas of priority for the work of the Department in this year and next year, we really have three specific areas of priority. The first is, as Honourable Holmes and others have indicated, the importance of reporting back on the COP17 outcomes and making those outcomes understandable to South Africans. And from there, also organizing ourselves to develop the South African position in a manner that enables South Africa to engage robustly in the negotiations that are leading up to COP18. To ensure that we secure what was achieved in Durban at COP17. There are some risks to ensuring that we secure the COP17 outcomes, and these will be presented at our presentation to to the committee shortly. So there's the reporting back, there's the development of the South African position going forward, there's then the development of a detailed action plan for implementation of the national climate change response policy, which, as you indicated, Honourable Chair, was passed by this committee in December last year. There's extensive work to be done between now and October next year. We have some hard deadlines in that respect, both in relation to the work, mitigation work and the adaptation work. On mitigation, we have to define the sectoral mitigation potential and the impact of mitigation, as well as the contribution, sectoral contributions to mitigation, and we need to define the carbon budgets for various sectors. On adaptation, we need to develop long-term adaptation scenarios on the basis of the climate change predictions for the Southern Africa sub-region. Honourable Chair, you indicated, and Honourable Morgan indicated, the importance of institutional arrangements. It really is a critical area. We will be using a series of different institutional levels. So we will be using the existing institutional arrangements, for example, through MINMEC, through MINTEC, through the various DG clusters. We also have the Intergovernmental Committee on Climate Change, as well as the National Committee on Climate Change. The Intergovernmental Committee deals with both departments at all spheres, national, provincial, and local sphere, that need to be engaging on implementation of the National White Paper, Climate Change White Paper. And the National Committee of Climate Change involves the various stakeholders. We do recognize that these institutional arrangements need to be geared up to shift from a mode of operation which was really about engaging in COP17 and preparing and engaging on the National White Paper development. We're now about implementation. So the question is, how do we make these institutions and committees functional for implementation? And there I will go into more detail when we do the presentation. And then I think the other point that was raised was around the issue of finance. It is quite a dynamic environment, both internationally and nationally, that we are dealing with in respect of climate change finance. It is important, as Honourable Holomisa indicated, that there is an understanding of the different financial sources and how they function. Of course, the Green Climate Fund still has a way to go in respect of operationalisation. We've only just achieved agreement on the design of the Green Climate Fund in Durban, so there is significant further work, and we can go into that in the further detailed presentation that will take place at the committee shortly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, just then in conclusion, I think that the honourable members have raised also questions that we probably are awaiting political guidance on. In respect to, for instance, the question on CDM and how we're monitoring the processes and whether there could be a panel for review. Currently in the country, and we do have a CDM authority in terms of NEMA, which is the Department of Energy. But in terms of prospects into the future, this is an area which is also subject to further negotiations, because they have, even after Durban, there are issues that are unresolved related to hot air issues and so on, because there was a change in the global environment climate in respect to the high emitting countries versus the developing countries that are beginning to increase their levels of emissions. So I think that there is a working group or a panel that is going to be established to begin to review part of the work that is focusing on clean development mechanisms. And I think on, in respect to the decertification and other challenges in terms of either land degradation or even continued pollution, the programs that Judy was referring to would begin to help us as a country to respond. And I think subject to the discussions in Cabinet, the Department is planning to have a schedule of provincial consultations to unpack further what exactly the outcome of Durban means in respect to the country position, not in respect to the COP presidency. It's more about what are the expected responses from civil society, business, and even government departments across the spheres or across the levels of government. I also wanted to just indicate that Treasury has given us an allocation or the responsibility to manage the fund, the green fund, the country's green fund, not the international financing. And we are then working on the framework on, in terms of how that fund is going to function with DBSA, because that was the kind of a preference that Treasury gave us as a condition to then oversee that fund as a department. And therefore, we are going to be able to unpack further those thematic areas that we outlined in the green economy and what are the kinds of programs that the country will undertake. Then lastly, Chair, in respect to the implications on human resources for the department responding to SONA, we do expect that already there are areas of challenge that the department is not going to be able to respond as we are currently. We need additional capacity for proactive planning capacity. The minister already has outlined a refined structure for the department, which is what we'll also present to the committee when we discuss the strategic plan in a week's time. And lastly, for the Honourable Costana's question on how far we have gone in terms of the reduction in emissions as a country, again from the undertaking that was provided or at least pronounced upon by the president, the South Africa was still going to grow the emissions over a period of time. And there were upper limits that were outlined in that statement of the president, and therefore we can assess how far we are in respect to that. And in the climate change policy that Parliament processed last year, those are clearly outlined in respect to also how we are doing with the current implementation of programs. And private sector engagements would be ongoing through the processes of carbon budgeting, or at least agreeing on which sectors and subsectors would then continue to make a contribution towards us reducing those emissions. And the Minister of Finance, Carbon and Pricing, in terms of the tax, also indicated exactly that there will be a particular move in terms of progressive progress into the future in respect to the various implementation tools that are outlined in the policy. So in a nutshell, I think those are the responses to all the questions that have been provided. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We've seriously run out of time. In any case, this is not the last bite of the cherry. This department will be back here next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, to come and present their budget work. All these issues will come up again. We can follow up questions. But to say there's a lot of good stuff here, and I'm very happy to see the department's got its head around SONA, it's got its plans in place, and it's for us now to, as a committee, to fit into that, to work into that. There's some serious, serious issues on the horizon. The department must fulfill its duties, not pass it on to Parliament. Say there's an act coming here and an act coming here. Parliament's structured in a way that if Parliament doesn't decide that a certain bill has to be jointly dealt with, that bill is dealt with, which whatever committee is dealt with. So issues like the spatial planning and that becomes problematic if we're not part of it. If that bill comes here in the wrong form, then already the problem will start then. So on that bill, on the mining bill, on the green paper of land reform, the department must make its input strongly into those processes, that those positions are in those papers, or at least they are recorded that they should be in those papers. Okay, it's very important that you cannot rely that somehow the things are going to work out again in Parliament, okay, because it may not. It's clear to me we're going to have to engage on the Green Economy Accord, because the way it was explained, and I hope you all have got a copy now, they've handed out copies, the way it was explained clearly, the vision there, we may have to try and see if we can broaden it. The National Development Plan is clearly going to need more engagement, which we're doing. Then, from the department side, the Green Economy Modelling Report and your assessment on your capacity to deliver on the state of the nation, those two issues we want feedback on. It's clear to me we're going to have to also, in line with the questions of General Lamisa, it's clear to me we're going to have to take that sustainable development strategy and have a look at it as a committee, get comments on it and so on. The General has raised one issue, where it should be housed. Obviously, there are options, all kind of ways. I mean, the department has already raised one of the big problems. It may be better situated to be in the Planning Commission. The problem is the Planning Commission was never envisioned, as it stands now, to do that kind of thing. So what other options are there? So I think the question he raises, other people raise. So we're going to clearly have to make space for that. Then on our oversight program, we're going to have to put the GIS and the EMFs. I want us to look a bit more at that and see. And hopefully during the budget, we need some more indication how much money we need to get that thing done. It has to maybe be one of the things we deal with in the budget vote to see that we get that done. So there's a whole lot of stuff. I've only listed some of them that need further. But next week, we will have more time to engage on these stuff. And also, if we can't do the COP17, we'll also have to fit it in sometime next week. Okay? All right. Thank you very much to the department. Let's rush quickly to the other department. Again, as I said, I'm happy if we just take at least the input, because at least we can, 2 weeks' time, they're coming for 2 days. So at least we can then have this to prepare for them. But at least I want to give the department a chance to present at least before 1 o'clock. Okay. Now, before I start, let me firstly start by welcoming our new DG. DG, you must just say if I pronounce things wrongly, but as I understand it, you are Mr. Maxwell Serenya. Serenya. That already becomes complicated. So I'm just going to call you DG to avoid any embarrassment. So we've got a new DG. It's been some time in the coming, in the making. I'm going to ask him to take 5 minutes to explain to us who he is, so we can at least have a picture of it. He'll do it better than I do, and then we'll leave it over to you to make the input. So a very big welcome, DG, to your first meeting here. We hope it's many more. Please tell us a bit about yourself, and we'll then, I've also got a CV of yours, I can circulate that. And then I hear the Babawa's birthday today. She has turned 20, and it's very nice of her to reach at least her 20-year-old. Welcome, Babawa, and I hope you have a very nice birthday so far away from home. DG, over to you. You can sit down, Matthew. This thing is made for. Sit it easier, then you'll be comfortable. Okay.
morning, the members of the Portfolio Committee for Water and Environmental Affairs. Chairperson of the Committee Honorable, Mr. John Delano, thanks for the welcome. Just a brief introduction. My name is Maxwell Sukhania. I come from Mtata, just joined the department as the Director General in January. I have been a frequent visitor to these sessions in my previous life, at least between 2004 and 2009, and I can recognize only one member from those two members of the Portfolio Committee, Ms. Bembo, and that is when I was the Chief Executive of Amatola Water in the Eastern Cape. That is as much as I think I should say. The chairperson has indicated that we are going to be regular visitors in the next weeks and months to this assembly. The time is starting late. I'm sure the level of concentration has gone down considerable, so we better just get to the main issue of the day. Just introduce the other members of the team who are with me. From the presentation point of view, I do have the COO, Chief Operating Officer Trevor Balza, who has been an acting DG as well before. He will be making the presentation on our behalf. But we brought a considerable team here to respond to all questions that may arise after the presentation. From the policy and regulation and planning point of view, we've got Mbangi Fumbanda. If you can just stand up, please, the member, see you. We also have from the infrastructure side, which is the main topic of the day, Zandi Lemate, the acting DG for that. To stand up, Zandi, quickly, please. And we do have the two CFOs handling both the main account and the trading account, Ms. Ndabiseng Kubi for the main account, and Faisal Ismail, the acting CFO for trading. And it's both of you. Okay. And we do also have the DDG for the regions where these activities are taking place, Ms. Tande Kambasa. Yes, okay. We also, Ms. Babala Manyarengaro's support in the Chief Operating Officer, it is today. Also, from the support staff for both the parliamentary officers for the ministry and the deputy minister, that's Errol Makoba and Refulam now are with us. Thank you. Chairperson, I'm not with your permission whether we do or you will give us formally time to make a presentation.
Chairperson, honourable members, good afternoon. I just wanted to cross the floor to do the presentation if I could. Chairperson, members, do I have to disclose that now, Chair? Chairperson, honourable members, if I could just, as a caveat before going into the presentation, we focus very much on the issues which relate directly to the SONA, given that more detail around the projects coming, which are referenced in the SONA, together with the other programs of the department, will be done when we do the strategic plan and deal with the budget for the department. So if you could just bear with me, so it's quite a high level information that we're providing, although all the detail is there. We've just looked at extracts from the SONA. I'm not going to read it, but we've just highlighted the issues coming out of the SONA which relate to water, the triple challenge of unemployment, poverty, and inequity, which persists. And I must just make a caveat here once again in terms of employment. While we're going to show you some employment figures, we need to bear in mind that through the infrastructure programs that we do, they're not huge job creation projects, because the jobs that will be created are the indirect jobs as a result of the infrastructure having been built. And the jobs which will be created in the various sectors, energy, agriculture, mining, etc., those will come out, I'm sure, of other presentations by those sectors. Just also to stress on the infrastructure development in terms of the new growth path, wrong way around, and then also the infrastructure plan with the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. So some of the projects that we're dealing with are certainly on the radar screen of the PICC as well. The areas of focus are, of course, the water infrastructure centred in the two main areas in Limpopo and the Waterberg, Waterberg in the western part and Steelpoint in the eastern part. And those are projects which the committee is very familiar with already. Also, touching on the Eastern Cape, the Umzumbulu River, the Mthatha Revitalization Project, and then the rollout of some of the infrastructure in the Northwest Province as well. And just also further, I think an important point from the SONA is that the massive infrastructure investment mustn't leave just power stations, rail lines, dams, and roads. It must industrialize the country, generate skills, and boost much-needed job creation. So the infrastructure we're putting in is really creating that environment whereby jobs can be created by those other sectors ongoing, because the jobs that are created on a sustainable basis on these projects in terms of operating and maintenance are quite small in relation to those created during construction. Then, of course, we extend access to basic water supply, and that really is for us to focus on being able to service the unserviced, and that would be a focus which we would deal with more extensively in the strategic plan in terms of servicing those areas which still have large areas of lack of access to water supply in KZN, Limpopo, and the Eastern Cape in particular. Have I gone backwards? Yes, I have again. Sorry about that, I'm pressing the... So just to focus, coming out of the President's speech, job creation, that will be through the infrastructure development, the rehabilitation and refurbishment, the regional bulk infrastructure program, two other programs we run, which is the Dr. River and the War on Leaks, and then, of course, the infrastructure development program, where we're doing integrated water infrastructure planning and also the integrated investment plan, which we'll be presenting later on this year. Just up front, one of the projects not mentioned in the President's speech, but which has been completed and the final sign-off will take place in a couple months' time, although the project is running, is the Vaal Eastern Subsystem Augmentation Project, which is a conveyance system of abstraction from the Vaal River storage high lift pumps, 121-kilometre pipeline, to supply and to secure the water supplies to Eskom and Sasol in the Mpumalanga province. And that's been completed at just under 2.7 billion, and that created 1,600 direct jobs during construction. In terms of the coming then to the items of the SONA, the Makola Water, first of all, the Waterberg Development Zone, that's the project which we have presented here before, is the Makola Crocodile Water Augmentation Project, which is approved as a government water work. Phase one is under construction or implementation at present, and that's a 2.138 billion project that's being implemented by TCTA for the department. Phase 2 is under review, together with the sourcing of funding for that Phase 2, where we will require a further $10.5 billion. And just to indicate there that the Phase 2 has to come on board at some stage, just to make sure that we are able to give water supply to Eskom in particular at the levels of assurance that they need with regard to the way they manage risk around the Modupi power station in particular. The steel plant development zone, that is the area covering the Dawoop Dam. That dam is well on track to be completed. It will be completed in December this year at the cost of $3 billion, and impoundment is set for September this year. That set should be September. My apologies for that. There's a P that's fallen out there. That's not the P for pounds. Honourable Chair, the impoundment, that is when we actually close the river diversion to the embankment and are able to start storing water. And with a dam of that size, it would normally take about a season or a season and a half, up to two seasons to fill the dam. So once we start impoundment, it doesn't mean that water will be on tap immediately. We do have to, and it's going to be very much dependent on the rainfall patterns that we have going forward, but it would be a season and a half to two seasons. The bulk distribution system, which is phase 2C, site handover is targeted for March of this year, and that's the pipeline that will go from the dam to Steelport, $1.9 billion, which will be implemented by TCTA. And then, of course, following on from that main pipeline, Chair, will be the other distribution systems to take water to those communities within the Sekekuni area. The water project on Steelport. Just on the Mzimbubu, Minister Molewa will certainly make announcements around the Mzimbubu River Development Plan in terms of much more detail.
New project. This Mzimbubu one in the old Transkei, is it?
That's correct.
Because I don't remember there being one like this. So this is why, this is new. The others are, I think, going on.
Have been ongoing, yeah. But they were mentioned.
We'll need more detail on that, but we'll do it.
So the Mzimbubu River Development, I do believe that Minister Molewa needs the opportunity to give the greater detail around it. But just as a thumbnail sketch, Chairperson, we're looking at a project up to $20 billion. It could be in excess of $20 billion, and that would include some of the infrastructure up to the dam and around the dam as well. That it includes would include a multi-purpose dam on the Tsitsa River, which is a tributary of the Mzimbubu, and in terms of the work we're doing, we refer to that dam as the Tabalanga Dam, and that would be to supply water for irrigation, bulk domestic water supply. Obviously, that would be to industry that's developed there, and then of course possible hydroelectric generation. Minister Molewa, together with Minister Peters, have certainly indicated that whenever we do any new dam development, we have to consider hydroelectric power as well. But obviously that fits into the IRP, would have to fit into the IRP. And Minister will make more, give more information around that as well. In the northwest, Chairperson, we've got two projects running at the moment. It's the Tawung Nalegi Bulk Water Supply, and this is a project which has been funded through the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant Program. It's a multi-purpose project that is converting the Tawung Dam, which was developed a number of years back as a single-purpose dam, and we're moving away from that dam as having been developed at that stage just for agricultural use. To also expand the use into domestic, industrial, and of course to the mines if necessary. And work started there in February 2010. That's quite a large project, $580 million, many kilometres of pipeline was scheduled. The last phase would be completed in 2016. And my colleague Tandaka Mbasa, DDG Regions, would be able to give more substantive detail there. The other one is the Fentersburg Bulk Water Supply, $30 million. And Chair, these amounts look fairly small when you peg it against the Umzumbulu project, but they cover a very important areas and bring water to areas which are underserviced at the moment. Kindersburg covers the construction of a reservoir pipeline, upgrading of water treatment works, which is to commence in 2012 with a target date for completion in May 2013. The Mtata revitalization, which was also covered in the President's speech, the SONA, we will be spending over 600 million over the medium term in that project. And if you look at the draft E&E document, you'll see that there's a specific line item for the Mtata revitalization project. And that's a capitalist project that are part of the presidential intervention, which amount, as I say, to that presidential intervention, which amount to that 600 million in the top line there. Acid mine drainage in the SONA, you will have seen that tucked in under the reference to COP17. We have at the moment 428 million allocated over 2 years, and that's for the implementation of sustainable ways of containing and managing and leveraging the effects of acid mine drainage, particularly in the Witwatersrand area. And that project is under implementation at present, with the first stage of the immediate solution will be coming on stream in the middle of March. And that's where we will increase the capacity of a neutralization plant to be able to increase the capacity from 15 megalitres up to 35 megalitres in the first immediate stage, and that is sufficient to deal with the decant in the Western Basin in particular. And then we will then put in the other short-term measure to increase that 35 megalitres up to 60 megalitres. We will then be able to start drawing down the decant to try and get to what we've estimated is the ECL level. And then work will then commence after March in the Central Basin to insert the pumps in the Central Basin as well. Clan William Dam, the raising of the Clan William Dam by 13 metres is to provide additional water to establish resource poor farmers. That's one of the benefits out of that raising. But it's also the other issue that has to be dealt with very urgently around Clan William is ensuring the long-term safety of the dam wall, because our safety inspections on that particular dam have raised some concerns which we have to deal with as part of that that project. I must apologize, Clan William, in our excitement seems to have appeared twice. The other one, in terms of the
KZN... I think you're trying to impress me as my constituency, so you put it in twice, I think you're going
to... Chair, without pointing fingers, I think it's the birthday girl that that helped me with that excitement. I think she was a bit excited when we were working on this in anticipation of her birthday today. At least she does have it every year. Tomorrow she could have had a birthday occasionally. The raising of the Hazelmere Dam, chairperson, at 162 million, it's to augment water supply to the KZN North Coast, and it will increase the yield of the dam for the long-term supply. There are certain issues which we're picking up. We've started with the foundation drilling to just establish the extent of the stability of the foundations on the existing dam, and to take the right decisions around the raising of the dam. And there are some concerns which we will hopefully be able to report back to the committee in the following month or so in terms of the implications of the foundation conditions which we're picking up through the drilling program. Then in terms of the long-term infrastructure planning, Chairperson, you'll recall you attended a workshop which we had in July sometime last year around the development of a integrated plan, a 10-year plan. We're making good progress on that with the assistance of the DBSA. And that 10-year integrated plan will incorporate all of the programs of the departments, the water boards and the municipalities. There will be demand-driven and a cradle-to-grave program to cover full life cycle costs. So when we present that plan, which we must have completed by time we go into the 2013 MTF cycle, will cover not only development costs, it will cover rehabilitation of existing infrastructure, and it will cover the essential elements of operation and maintenance, with a particular focus on to water conservation and water demand management. And you'll recall, Chairperson, that when we did some presentations to you last year, we spoke of the reconciliation strategies, and every one of the reconciliation strategies which we've touched on does focus on the need for us to do water conservation and water demand management. We can't or we don't have the luxury of just developing very many more new dams. We've actually got to use our current infrastructure and the water that we have in our systems a lot more judiciously. So water conservation and water demand management becomes very important. I've already said that the investment plan needs to be ready for the 2013 budget cycle, and will also be linked to our corporate geographical information system to facilitate effective planning and management of that infrastructure. Chair, that while we are spearheading the preparation of that plan, the plan does get prepared with inputs from a host of other departments and sector, water use sectors as well. It's not a product, while we produce the product, it's a product which will have inputs from other players as well. Just in terms of the regulatory framework, I'm going to touch on the water use licensing. There's any infrastructure development in the country at the end of the day has some impact on the programs which we run in terms of considering and dealing with water use licenses. And towards the end of last year, when we addressed the portfolio committee, I had indicated that we had hoped to finish and deal with the eradication of the backlogs by December of last year. For various reasons, we did not, were not able to achieve that target. Some of the reasons being the delays in getting information back from the applicants, which is quite difficult at some stage. So we record a water use license as being in the system once it's delivered, and then as we evaluate the license, we find that there's information that's missing, and there's a to and fro with the applicants. And just to break down those licenses, we've got 171 in the mining sector, 159 in local government, 75 with regard to stream flow reduction activities, and the stream flow reduction activity is related to the afforestation programs, industry 32 and agriculture 54. But my colleague Taleka Basa DDG Regions, who is a custodian of that program, will be able to fill in a lot more detail. I've already given a high-level summary there. With regard to job creation around the infrastructure, these are the projections that we have given, and they fit into the outcome 6, which is the outcome on infrastructure around water augmentation. Those are the jobs that will be created per year in terms of implementing those projects from 2011, our current year, through to 2014. Water services, that is the regional bulk infrastructure program. Rehabilitation and refurbishment, that's the work that we're doing on our canal systems and the dam safety program on our major dams, and the totals you have there as well. And then we have two other programs. Hang on, why do I have water services? Yeah, water services separately. Sorry? Okay, my apology. The water services there relates to some of the work which our infrastructure branch do around water services on construction at the Enyaka and Nondoni projects. So you'll then see water services on the next slide as well in terms of the Big program, where These are, here we are reflecting jobs already created through the Adopt the River program. It's a program which focuses particularly on women and youth, where we've created 590 jobs around basic water resources management, water quality, first aid, water safety, health and safety, and a whole host of issues around resource management. The regional bulk infrastructure program, which is on the work there is done on the same principles as the extended public works program, on the building of wastewater treatment works, the training of operators, artisans, and semi-skilled training programs, and the numbers given there, we've created 3,750 jobs. Capacity development, Chair, you've indicated last year, don't come and tell us that we've got capacity constraints. So what I'm indicating to you is some of the interventions we've put in place to deal with improving the capacity in the department. We have signed that MOU with DBSA, and it's been implemented at the moment. My colleague, once again, and my apology for referring to her all the time, but she does cover quite a large chunk of the budget in the department, is responsible for a large chunk of the budget in the department. Through that MOU with DBSA, they are assisting with the with project management support and also with the assessment of projects in terms of their viability and project readiness for implementation. We're also utilizing the water board capacity in terms of, particularly in terms of our rapid response unit, where we are responding to breakdowns of infrastructure at a municipal level as they occur and as we are called on. And there we're using departmental capacity supplemented by the capacity of our 13 water boards. TCTA will continue to be used as an implementing agent to work down and many other projects as they are with the AMD as well. There's also a strategy which is under development in terms of targeted recruitment to bring in more engineers into the department that focuses on the work that is being done by our learning academy, and we are also tapping in to the Department of Public Works a database on retired engineers to try and bring back some skills into the department. And the financial side, it's access to debt, and there I'm referring to using TCTA to raise funding in the markets for projects, and in particular it's a funding for the McCullough Phase 2, which they are dealing with at the moment, and the Lesotho Highlands Phase 2 project as well. At top management yesterday, DDG, Acting DDG Infrastructure and CFO for the Water Trading Entity presented to us their plan in terms of improving revenue collection. And that, Chair, has been a concern from this committee, and they presented a very credible program to top management in terms of looking at that value chain to make sure that we're getting the revenue in to be able to do the very essential O&M on our existing infrastructure. Also looking at co-funding proposals with other spheres of government and also with the private sector. The private sector, I would refer particularly to the Willie Pumps River Development Project, which is the work dam and the bulk distribution system, where we're looking at tapping into some of the money which the mining houses have available, which could be used to co-fund some of the infrastructure that goes into that area. And Chair, that's the end of my presentation. Questions I will address together with DG and my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Right, we're going to have some time for questions, but obviously please bear in mind that all these issues we can take up when they come here. This just gives us a feel for it. You can get some clarity around things. I just wanted to make 100% sure the Umzimvubu project then is the only one with new money.
Chairperson, correct. We've had a small amount of money on our budget in relation to doing the preparatory work, but new money in terms of getting to the 20 billion. That's the new money we've got to secure.
So the president announced that you guys now have to go and develop a plan. You estimate it's going to be about 20 billion, and then you'll have to get approval for that. But at least at a presidential public level, it's been announced. Okay. So I want to make sure about that, that we really know what is new and what has been in the pipeline for a while. All right. Members, any questions? Dr. Huang, Ms. Manganya, Mr. Skosana, General Lamisa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, of course, today I want to congratulate the new DG. I hope you can move all your department very successful for the future. Because this department, I think, appears has a lot of problems. Yeah. And I like this for his presentation for page 15. Can you come to the page 15? Regarding for your number of job creation, you show to the RVIG is a woman is 1125, then the youth is 750. How you can total come in the total is 3750. Page 15.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So they just have bad education. They can't do anything.
So I'd like to know how you can calculate for this amount for total this job created for this is only half for this total amount. Yeah. And Chairperson, for regarding for the integrated water infrastructure, this cost the many budget and the project, but the total is this job creation. I didn't mention for the. This one, the job creation is important for how is utilized this project that can create more job opportunity. Regarding for this page 9, this first one is under implementation. You will cost 2.1 billion, but I don't know this one is which financial year. This is 2011 or 2012, or which financial year for phase 1 and phase 2. Yeah, you indicate for phase 1 and phase 2 for this budget, but I don't know this which financial budget. So can you indicate for the clear for the reason? But Chairperson, I think is for this water department, I still concerned for the response to the sonar. It's a job creation. So I like from the BD side can indicate for this department job creation for the target after 2 years, until 2014, what is your target for your job creation? Thank you.
Mr. Sano? Sorry,
JJ, you were saying.
Mr. Sano? I keep on looking at you and I'm saying, Mr. Sano, I think there's something,
there must be something going on here. Ms. Manganya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thanks to the presenter because there is something that we will work on, even in future. When we say we didn't do this, we will refer to what you have given us. Why I'm saying this, we, one day, one time, we did not contact with the so called Mandoli versus Muyeke. So, if we got this document, I think we will do the follow-up every time and again. I do appreciate the issue of water in centers of Tau, but my concern is that in March 10, all of us, when we are seated here, we know that in March 10, there is no water in March 10. Even if they can do the borehole, they won't get water. But I don't hear us coming with a strategy that says because Mafeking doesn't have this, this is what we are intending to do, that in future when we got a budget, we will do 1, 2, 3. Last week, Ngobi in Morepile is just next to Pretoria, where we've got bulk and bulk of water.
I don't know if we've got so many years here in Murasile, Muri, not having water. The municipality of Madureni try and Budana district try one day to can assist, because this gap is for a long time. Murasile can't get water. That's next to housing where they can tap water from. So I'm saying, whilst I'm appreciating this document, I was just saying I'm giving the department the things to think about when next time when they come, they must tell us more about what they are doing. Lastly, I'm not presenting my problems, but I feel today I must say something. This Moses Kodana in the Janala district, this refurbishment of infrastructure, I think is the place that is more relevant if we can say something about Moses Kodana. Because people can have water every time and again, it's a pipe, and then it will take 5 months to be repaired. Why I'm saying this, people who are giving us water, they take more, they are so capable. But what is challenge? They don't know if they have bought the issue of issuing water to this municipality. There is no infrastructure. It's rotten, so it needs refurbishment. Lastly, because I asked a question while the water department was not here, I think next time when they come, Chesterton, if they are coming, I need to know more about this treaty that we have taken with Botswana. Because we can't stay without water, but the dam is in our place. We can still give zero of the water that is going to Botswana. Maybe clarity, because I don't understand why it was done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kosana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I still need a clarity on this issue of job creation. Because when we speak about job creation, we've got different people in the community. Can't just speak about youth and the women only. So I still need a clarity on this. And I'm still listening and waiting for a response on its own. Because the job creation that we are talking about here today must respond to its own of the president. I should think if it don't speak to the son, then we should must go back to the drawing board and make sure that whatever we're doing must be in line with the son. We want to know how many jobs in responding to its own is the department going to create this year. Because very serious, because the president has announced the Apple must respond. And secondly, Chairperson, the number of jobs that we spoke about last year, I should think in the presentation of their report for last year's job, they must give us really a clarity on those jobs. What happened? Did they appointed people? What happened? Because there were a lot of jobs last year that we were talking about. But we'll need a response on that, even if not now, but when they come back, we must get a response on that, Chairperson. And the plan for other provinces, because the infrastructure, when you talk about the infrastructure, I should think you need to consider the entire country, particularly the poor of the poorest, the people who are poor. For instance, when I can give you an example, when you talk about the people in Mpumalanga who are really in need of water, push batteries. The people who push batteries, some of them don't have water. It's a very serious problem. I just make an example about it. Even the other areas within the country, we must get a sense of how to assist those communities. And also, Chairperson, the Chosinitev issue, I should think, we'll get a response on it. How far are we? Also, we've sung a song about this since 2009. Until last year, you just want to get a sense of where are we now about Jordini Dam. And lastly, Chairperson, this infrastructure, we need to get a clear plan, as I think.
distinguish between SONA and what's going to come for the whole department next week. Because remember when we were up in Pretoria, they showed us the whole infrastructure plan they're trying to draw up. So that big thing they're doing, that thick document they showed us like this, that is still work in progress. So we should distinguish that from what the president said, okay? All right, General Lomisha, I think, was the last one. Oh, okay, I missed that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I join my colleagues in congratulating and welcoming the new DG. Let me take the department down the memory line. The former Minister Sondrika did pray for the portfolio committee. If I'm not mistaken, it was 2009 about the Uzumbubu Dam, and he said that the cabinet has nodded to this. It was pleasing to hear President Zuma profiling this project at that level. But what surprised me was the response from your department. I've forgotten the name of the gentleman, but he was reported as being a project manager for the area. The article appeared in the Business Day. He said that the study would take minimum of 2 years. Former minister in 2009 said the project is going ahead. Now we are told by junior after a president said this is going to happen. He said it's going to take another 2 years. At the time of Minister Sondrika's announcement in the portfolio committee, I did advise that please don't redo the study, because the study was conducted by the then Transkei government, DPSA, Mao Sudi Associates, University of Transkei. It was called University of Transkei. All I said to him, maybe you need to appoint auditors. Start checking what are the new developments now. What would be the cost in today's currency and so on. But for 2009 up to this year and another 2 years, on a study which was completed, you have to do it doing it again. When you come back next week or next time, please, can you come up with details? When did you appoint this committee you are referring to? Have you appointed new consultants? Have those consultants have access to those documents? So that it's going to make money out of the work which has already been done. I don't expect an answer today. Go back and do your homework. I will do mine. I've already given you information.
Thank you. Ms. Bengal?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to concur with Honorable Kusana on the progress report, the initial progress report on the Jezini Dam. And also, another question is that you should to get support on job creation, but the challenge is around the employment of the disabled people. What is the challenge in recruiting them? I'd like to know from the department. And I heard there is a gender unit, including the disability unit in the department. What is this unit do to make sure that disabled people do get opportunities? And maybe in future we should get their presentations before the portfolio committee. Thank you, sir.
Can we have responses, please? Some of these issues that are more detailed, like General Lamisa said, he's very happy in 2 weeks' time when you come that we get all those details. But if you want to respond to it, we can even, if you've got answers now, you can.
Just before this thing, thanks, Chair. I think I will take your cue. First of all, limitation of time, but because of the your advice as well, we'll be coming very soon for more detailed presentation. There's definitely an overlap, and we had in an earlier preparation going into detail, but when further consultation helps, let's just keep it high level with the SODAS, but details definitely are available, will come, but it's the open that directing has just taken the questions, and then we'll fill up the gaps or those specifications with the areas of the questions as well.
Chairperson DG, thank you. I was going to open in a similar vein that most of the questions raised are saying come back with the detail and give it to us when you engage again. But I think I must just deal with the first question in terms of the numbers that were given there. And that relates to those numbers there, that their totals don't appear to add up, particularly for RP. The reason for that is that we've only shown in those other columns the women and youth as segmented, that the balance is able people, those who don't fall into the category of women and youth. So the total figure is 3750, as you see it there, and we just said that we show you the women and youth component of that. As opposed to the adopter river, the reason that one adds up to 590 is that that program targets specifically women and youth.
Is this a policy of the department? I tell you why, I've received a complaint that at the Ken Williams Dam, that the municipality is going around only collecting people between 18 and 25 and women's names. They're not collecting anyone else on it. Now, is that a project of yours? Is that your criteria? Or that just got something to do with them? Well, I mean, why this strikes me is that you present it like that. So that is why I'm asking the question.
Chair, I would have to be helped by my colleagues, but I'm not the only program that I'm aware of which specifically targets women and youth is around the Dr. River. The other programs we try and meet the targets of, which are set for us by government. But in response to Mam Bengu's question, the issue of people with disabilities, I will get the detail that we can come back on that as well. But the programs I've reported on today reflect zero in terms of people with disabilities. And that's the explanation there. The other issue around job creation, which raised by Dr. Wong, is around the target for 2014. The target we put into the job creation program up to 2014 was summated up to 26,000 jobs over the period up to 2014. So you'll see peaks and troughs in that job creation through to 2014, but our target was 26,000. The question by Mad Mangamyana, I've taken note, and we will certainly deal with those issues when we come back. Mambasa, Tanek Mambasa, does have information available around Moratele and the difficulties with bulk water supply in terms of supply coming from Lake Chuane and Bojimala and the issues relating to that, and also in Moses Cortana with regard to the need for the refurbishment of those pipes. That detail will be given by Tandaka. I also don't have, ma'am, the details of the treaty with Botswana, but that we noted, and we'll bring that back in terms of detail there. Honourable Skosana's one on the job creation and the need to come back on those figures. We will certainly do that on the jobs, unless my colleagues are able to help me now. Shazini Dan, more detail will come back. And then, of course, Honourable Skosana, the 10-year plan. And as I indicated in my presentation, the 10-year plan, we target to have that on the table so that it informs our 2013 budget going forward. General Honamisa, I'm aware that DG has already had a meeting with one of the individuals that have information which General Honamisa is referring to. I certainly also, Chair, have quite a history of knowledge around the Umzimvubu project as well, having worked in those areas in my previous life. Chair, if I could hand over to DG again, if there are any other items to add up, I think Zandile would be able to just touch on the Waterburn project with the 2.1 over what financial years that is in. But that is detail which will come through the budget and the APP or the strategic plan presentation as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Through you, Chair, I'll come back. Let me allow the members of my team, both the region, if there's any area they wish to add and the infrastructure, starting with Ms. Marte.
Thanks, DG. I think the question on Mokolo Phase 1, there are two phases on the Mokolo project. There's Phase 1 and Phase 2. Phase 1 has already started, and it has a budget of budget is 2 billion. It is currently under construction. It will be completed in August 2015. Ideally, we were supposed to have started with Phase 2 of Mokolo. Unfortunately, due to the pullout of the Maputa 1 and Maputa 2 by Sasol project, we are unable to get a sufficient take-off agreement that could assist CCA to solicit debt from the capital market. We do, however, hope that the project is still going to continue because it has been stated as part of the broader water bank development zone. The matter is being discussed at PICC at the moment on how we are going to find a phase 2 of the call.
Anyone else?
Thank you, Chair. If I can just answer very briefly the question on the availability of water in Mafikeng, and just say mostly many parts of Northwest rely on groundwater, and one of the critical challenges in this province is the state of infrastructure. So there are two challenges: the management of groundwater to ensure sustainable supply, and the skills required to do that is a problem, but also the state of the infrastructure itself, and that manifests itself in the blue and green status. All the municipalities in that province performed badly. So it's one of the provinces that we're really targeting in as far as our support program is concerned. Moses Kotana and the infrastructure, I think I've already talked to that, but just to say, and this speaks to the infrastructure plan that Honorable Spassana talked to. We've done a lot in as far as building new infrastructure, but half the battle has been won. We really now need to look at the whole value chain and look at issues of sustainability, which is one of the critical outcomes that our infrastructure plan will be looking at. So I think one would cover most of these problems under that statement. Honorable Spassana, when it comes to job creation, and I was thinking about the question that you're asking. What specifically, what are your targets and how are you going to respond? We do have targets. We can provide information as the DG has already indicated. But if you look at the nature of our programs, what is required here is innovation and what we need to. We've already identified areas. For instance, we were talking this morning to say, if you want to improve revenue collection, you have graduate students that can be used to collect information, collect data. So we do have those programs that we have identified within the existing program, because the fact of the matter is there isn't much new money coming in. So it's our responsibility to look at the existing programs like regional bus infrastructure, how can we train more people to acquire skills and fixing leaks in the area so that they can create small businesses. So that detail would really be coming at a later stage.
And lastly, Chair, on my part, just to go back more on the Zimbabwe one, and more because the President has elevated to the level he has, and the approach, as indicated, is to not assume that this project has just started now. studied and overstudied over years, and that's the time to implement all of those. All that remains to be checked, and that's the approach I'm taking, is to file the records of plans and studies that exist, familiarize myself with them. Some will be within the department, others outside, take account of new circumstances we have now, which were not the case probably when 20 years or 30 years ago when some studies were done. Work closely with other departments that will have a role to play, bearing in mind the chair is not just a bulk or dams constructed for scenic views or leisure activities. It's more to drive the economic activity, mainly in the area of agriculture, which means the Department of Agriculture and Rural and Land Affairs must be part of the big plans. What do you do with the water when you have it? And then also energy, that is why you need to work with them, so that it's not a decoration or which is just there, never achieved doing anything to the economy of the area. So they want a real inclusive approach from the water side, planning, really taking to the highest level of detail. But as I say, working with others will have a significant role to play there. So that's what we'll do. And lastly, on my part, Chair, you earlier on did indicate that there were a number of areas, questions the department is meant to respond to. I'll familiarize myself with those as well, talk to the person So one wish is to have a very good working relationship with this committee and parliament in terms of our reporting requirements, and we'll only do that when we respond to the mandate you are given. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, department. We rushed you a bit, but at least the information is there. We can now engage with you in a 2 weeks' time. The important thing for me is this. If this department must find more creative ways of presenting your information, go and talk to your sister department. You know, as I sit here, for example, I'm trying to think the questions that Ma Manganya asked. What are you going to do about Africa? What are you going to do? You know, we can all ask those questions. We come from somewhere. We can all ask those questions. The reason we ask those questions is because clearly, you're not presenting your information to us in a way for us to understand what you're doing and what you're planning. I mean, when I came to this committee, one of the things I raised very strongly was transparency. So lo and behold, think how happy I was when I was sitting there in the House and the President started talking about this new dam in Transkei. That's why I asked you the first question, is this new money? Now, the point is you have to find more creative ways of presenting your information. I'm thinking, for example, I mean, why don't you try to present water in terms of what water we're going to provide in a schematic form? I mean, if you got this Makolo project, you say it started in 2008, and you put along the part of the schematic presentation where you'll be and where it will be finished, and how much water will it provide at that stage. The next one, crocodile. The whip. Now you can start seeing on a spreadsheet. Much easier to take this document and go and look back and what project have they got? Makolo or whatever. I mean, when the president thing was reading this in his debate, I said, no, I recognize that's already project that exists. And then the Transkei, okay, I don't recognize that one, that might be a new one. The problem is, and then the next step is that if you do that schematically, what is taking place? Then also to present to us where you are hoping to have projects, but there's not been approval yet. Then we'll know. If Ma Manganya asks you, what's happening in Africa? If you present to us what it is you are envisaging, but where there's no money for you, then we can also start looking at that and say, but now, you see, you're prioritizing in Northwest, five towns, you've got Mafeking as your sixth one. Actually, Mafeking is probably the most important. At least the member can engage with you. You don't have to agree with it, but they can engage with you. Now we don't know. We don't know what you're prioritizing in New Northwest. We don't know what your ideas are in Gauteng.
We don't know what they are in the Western Cape. We just know the things that have been approved, which take forever to try and implement. So you must try and find a way of presenting this to us differently, so we can see this to understand what you do. So if you do that with the provision of water, what is it we're providing? How does it look? I've seen the diagrams like that. It makes it much easier for me to understand. And then these are the ones that we are thinking of and we don't have money yet. Now you do the same thing with infrastructure as a schematic presentation. In infrastructure, we've got so much money to put a pipe in where I put a pipe, put a whatever. Now we can start seeing, you know, you don't have to take a document, the annual report, and read it, and it's cumbersome. Schematically, you look at it once, and you can see the whole thing. So you guys must try and think of more creative ways of presenting your information. Even if it's just annexes you give us, even if it's not, you know, to say, but to understand this better, look at this report. If we, in the year 2012, if you look at these schematic diagrams, you'll see 2 million more liters of water is going to come available. You know, one of you explained, you're going to, what is that funny word, you're going to impound or imprison or something. And then the water is going to go in the dam. And then, now, from this year, we will start filling up the Whip Dam. And so let people know that this year 2 million liters more water is going to come available. Next year, 12, if everything works out, if I look at your schematic presentation, in 2013, it's 30 million going to come online. In 2014, there's 50 million going to come. You know what I'm trying to say? You must present it in a more easy way for us to look at this, understand. Because then we can start saying, but if we look at the demands, in June when we were there, you gave us your demands and that stuff on sale, Fred gave us, then you can start trying to compare these things. But at the moment, it's very dry and very kind of, very difficult to understand what's going on. That's why we're getting all the questions. Because I cannot, as chair of this committee, I cannot explain to anyone how much more water is going to become available this year. I can't explain to anyone how much more water is going to become available next year. I can't explain to anyone in 2014 what is going to become available. I cannot explain to someone, if someone says, but what are you doing in Fenton's door? Are you thinking of something? You say to us, well, that's more groundwater. Then, well, have we got a plan? Yes, we've asked for money to put in 50 boreholes in there, but the money hasn't become available. Now, at least we know there's never going to be a dam there, but at least we know that part of your plans is boreholes for, what's it, Mafeking, God-forsaken place out there in the middle of nowhere, Mafeking. Okay, and so on and so on and so on. Okay, so let's try and get this. Did you have a bit of time now? Now you've got a bit of time to think how we're going to present this. How are we going to make it easier for people? You know, how can we get people in with, get some people with expertise, spend a bit of money, don't give bonuses this year, just give some more money, get some expertise into how you present these stuff. Right? So we can all try and get a better picture of understanding this thing. Okay. But thank you very much. It was a good presentation, understanding what's going on, and we will then in 2 weeks' time be able to take it further. Okay. Thank you. Can adjourn tomorrow 9:30 where? M46 Mars Building, DA Country, M Mars Building. We will take the presentation from Ms. Isop, and if there's some time and Cabinet has approved the COP17 assessment, we may have time for that. We'll see how we go. Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. I thought the presentations were good today.